Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Man, oh man, oh man. It reminds me of that song. Well, it wasn't even a song. It was a chant in a movie. Warriors, come out and play. That's the thing I think about when you look at what's happening in the Super Six. You know, Warriors, come out and play. Andre Durrell gets out. He walks away from the Super Six. Now, there's some rumors that the whole Arthur Abraham situation is a little bit of a fib, but who's to know? I mean, we can't judge a man before we got the facts that are in front of us, but at the moment, it took him, I don't know, maybe four or five times. I mean, I may be exaggerating. How many times was it, my host Gabriel Montoya on the line with me, how many times was it when he declined the contract of signing with Andre Ward and the place that they were going to be holding it at?
How many times did he decline it?
Yeah,
Well, that's the thing, is it's been a mystery this whole time. They've rescheduled twice, but if you read Steve Kim's article today, No More Mr. Nice Guy, mainly about Richard Schaefer, but then also about the Super Six, and we'll have him on in about 30 minutes, no date, no site was ever really discussed. And there are some insiders that talked to Steve and said, this fight was never going to happen. This fight was not a sham, but it was, there was something going on, and I haven't been able to talk to any of the players, really. Steve really didn't go on the record with a lot of people about it because people don't really want to talk about it. But it is really interesting. I'm very curious to hear what Steve has to say in person about it.
Well,
he actually hasn't spoken. But it's shady. And when you add in, like what you just said, the fight that was supposed to happen in Palm Springs with Arthur Abraham, and Andre Durrell basically alluded to the fact that he didn't want to fight with a bunch of Armenians in there, you know, not have home court advantage, and he got the fight moved to where he wanted it, you know, it doesn't look good. Although, on the other hand, his trainer and his family, or in Dan Raphael's article, are saying that there's been something wrong with him for quite a while, and they've taken a while to notice it, and now, you know, he finally said, there's something wrong with me. But, you know, it's that boy who cried wolf thing, dude. If you said you had a back injury before and you didn't, how does this look? It's hard to say, man.
That's my whole thing here is that, listen, you know, the whole thing was that when he fought, you know, when he went down and he fought Carl Froch, it was a X amount of audience. And how the Super Six works is they get a percentage of the ticket door, you know, the people that are walking through that door and paying for the tickets to watch the fight live. Durrell had every right to say, listen, hey, man, I had, what, 18 or, you know, plus audience, and I made a large amount of money. Now, when Agua Caliente offered and Gary Shaw had, you know, reserved the rights of having the Super Six between Andre Durrell and Arthur Abraham, you know, I can see that. Andre Durrell's like, wait a minute. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not going to make, you know, $600 when I made $15,000. You know what I mean? So I can kind of, you know, tend to feel his pain, you know, because it's hurting the wallet, you know. But does it make you look good as a fighter? Does it make you look good as a warrior? Of course not, because fight fans want to see guys fight. Fight fans don't ditch it. We don't care about how much you're going to make. You know why we don't care about it? Because we're not going to see it. We're not going to ride in that role, in that Beamer you're going to have, that Mercedes. We're not going to be in your mansion. We're not going to be any part of the luxuries you're going to get. The only part that we're going to be in is we'll tune in to watch you fight. That's all we should care about as a fight fan. Now, I've had a lot of people email me and say, hey, man, you know, I've seen your tweets. You're Twittering and stuff. You're being a little harsh. Hey. Maybe I'm being a little harsh. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm being realistic. Maybe I'm not. The fact of the matter is that, you know, I'm upset because as yourself, bro, as myself and a lot of other people that are very involved in this sport, we breathe boxing. And if we breathe it and we eat it and sleep it and shit it, we expect our fighters to do the exact same thing, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. But at the end of the day, this is it's a business, it's a sport, and these guys, you know, health on the line, and they are being compensated. I wish everybody, every fighter, every rider for that matter, was paid top dollar, was paid with their worth,
right?
You know, and that they were all able to walk away, not just, you know, the Andre Berto's of the world or the Floyd Mayweather's of the world, but, you know, the lower-level guys, the prospects, and when they came into the sport, that there was a base pay, so like in the NFL or the NBA, and there was a retirement fund that they all walked away. There was a health plan. There was some sort of structure for these guys so that they could walk away from the sport when they retire. And, you know, I don't want to have to be doing this when I'm 80 and banging out articles and waiting for the check. You know, I want something more for myself, as most fighters probably do, as most people do, you know, not just Americans, but people in general. But the thing here is, you know, if it is a brain injury, if there is brain damage, yes, it's an occupational hazard. And, yeah, this is the hurt business. It's a risky game. It's the only game, like James Toney says, that you don't play, you know. But at the same time, I want full disclosure, and I want to know what really happened. Why is it that nobody was able to talk about it? Why, Steve Kim pointed out, it's a great question. Why was this rescheduled twice when this fight wasn't ever going to happen? If he was having some sort of health issues that people noticed, and it's his trainer's job to say something, even if the fighter isn't, why didn't they say something sooner? And that Arthur Abraham fight was 6 months ago. What battery of tests were done, or rather what weren't done, to find out what was really wrong with him? You know, I mean, those are all things that are very, very important to know. I mean, he had a long amateur career. He may have taken some damage then. Who knows? Maybe, you know, I remember there was a Max Baer, was the second guy that had a ring death with him. And a lot of people attributed it to the beating that he took with Baer, but also the beating that he took before Max Baer. And
right.
Sometimes it takes a while for things to accrue. So I'm kind of taking the tack. I had a few people email me, why aren't you railing on this? Why aren't you weighing in on it? And one, Steve Kim's all over the story, and he's a much better investigative journalist than I ever will be. He's been doing it a lot longer, and that's not really my forte. I cover fighters. I cover fights. I let other guys kind of break the story because, you know, I'm working alongside one of the best in the business, and that's what he does. But I'm kind of doing like when everybody was accusing Manny Pacquiao of doing PEDs, you know, and they wanted the truth and they wanted me to make a stand about it. I would rather wait until all the evidence is in and be able to see it all rather than kind of saying, you know, and I was on board yesterday with Twitter kind of making the jokes. And then as I delved deeper and the Dan Raphael story came out and other things came to light and I had some conversations, I kind of backed off and said, you know what, let's wait and see. And I think that's probably the most important thing that we need to do is wait and see. If he's legitimately hurt, then he shouldn't be fighting. That's the bottom
line.
Well,
you know,
if he's not, though, then somebody needs to sue his ass.
Well, look, this is, you know, and we're going to listen. We have a bunch of calls coming in right now. Fight fans want to talk about this. You guys want to call in right now to leave it on the ring. The lines are going to be open, 347-215-7598. And you're absolutely right. If this is a legitimate thing, hey, hope you get better. You know what, retire before you do get damaged. It's a very unfortunate thing. Your career, right when it was getting a kickstart, And a halt because of what happened with Arthur Abraham. Now, but the only thing is, like you mentioned a little earlier, cry wolf. There was a lot of rumors, and the thing was, it's not like it wasn't really rumors when he decided to stamp it. When we asked him on leaving the ring, hey, was this really a back injury, or was this a back injury with a little bit of play because of money wise? And he said, well, a little bit of both. Those aren't his exact words. Don't quote me on it. Go back and listen to the show. But to sum it all up, it was like, yeah, this is a little bit of both. We knew about it. Guys that are in the sport, they're in the grind, that actually decide to go in and investigate and dig a little bit, we get this kind of information, you know? And That's the thing that really, honestly, as me being a supporter of Andre Durell, and I love the kid's style. I supported him from the beginning. We've had him on numerous times. Yeah, I supported him. I thought really.
No,
honestly,
I know you supported him. I just didn't know you liked his style.
I do like his style. I do like his style. You know, I'm not gonna lie. I think the kid's very gifted. Very gifted.
Yes.
Just thought I thought that he was very immature at the moment, not as a person, but as a fighter. It takes moments, it takes time to develop, and I thought that he needed that time. I thought he needed that the length of his career right now to develop into what he was going to be. Now we go back and we look at this. When you cry wolf and something really does happen. I'm a fight fan first before I'm a journalist or anything else, a radio personality. I'm a fight fan first. So I react. Just like the rest of the guys, I'm going to react. I'm going to be a little upset. I'm going to be a little pissed off. I'm going to call him an actor. I'm going to call him, hey, man, you know what? You're better than Robert De Niro. I'm going to say the whole works because of the fact that I'm a fight fan. Very passionate. I'm Latino for crying out loud. But at the end of the day, I go back and I look, okay, what if there's some truth to this? What if he's really hurt? I'm going to feel bad. I'm going to feel bad, Gabriel, for a moment. Just for a moment. You know what? Just for a moment. Because of the fact is you lied in the beginning. It's like getting that girlfriend, you know, she cheats on you. Not really cheats on you, but she goes out with another guy, right? And you find out all the facts. She just went out with another dude. And she's like, I'm never going to do it again. I screwed up. And you make it all right. And this time around, you find out. She ended up getting in the sack with him. Now, you're not going to believe everything. You just, you know,
right.
Okay, well, you got in the sack with the other dude before. That's exactly what Durrell has left the fight fans, the hardcore fight fans. And, yeah, sometimes my examples are a little, heavy for a lot of people. Some people that are not even getting into life. Some listeners, they're like, I don't even have a girlfriend, Dave. I'm only 14. Hey, I apologize. But I'm going to tell you right now, when you hit that age, you're going to understand what I'm saying. Let's let some fight fans in on the conversation. Let's go with D, who wants to talk about it. What's up, D? You're on live right now on Leaving in the Ring. D, you're on live right now, brother. You there?
Yo, what's happening?
What's happening, brother? Yo. What's on your mind?
Oh, man, rough. Oh, man, that was... Oh, man, come on, man. Something fishy about this, man.
I'm telling you, brother.
I think he wanted out this tournament. That's what I think. Same thing with Doug Kessler. You know, I disagree with
Kessler. I mean, there's medical evidence to suggest. I mean, he hasn't released the records, but he's the guy that's pretty sharp, Warren. I give him a pass on that. And he took a big beating in both the fights that he was in. Kessler, that's the difference. Kessler doesn't have a history of kind of bullshitting, whereas
But you just said it right now, though. If he took a beating, doesn't that weigh a little bit more why he would want to get out of the tournament, though?
Well,
right. Well,
I'll let him give his take rather than me rambling.
Just the way I think outside this tournament, I think they feel like they can make some more money than what they'll be getting if they stay in this tournament. That's why I think, like you said earlier, man, why come out now? You should have been came out. That fight happened how many months ago?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man.
Exactly.
I'm not a neurologist, so I don't really know how long it takes for these things to kind of show up, you know. Who knows? You know, it could have been residual effects. You know, some guys... like in the NFL, I know, you know, like Kurt Warner, I remember he got a few concussions, and he had light sensitivity for a long period of time. He had dizziness and all that, and he kind of had to stay out for a second. There's always those kind of lingering effects, and you kind of wait for them to go away. And maybe he had those. They didn't want to say anything about it, and they kept going on, and they didn't go away. And maybe they just kept pushing it back. I'm just playing devil's advocate. I really don't know.
No, I agree.
You know,
We don't. And that's the thing. We really don't know. But the thing is that, look at the time period of what has happened with Arthur Abraham from the beginning. We don't hear nothing. Nothing. Okay, we don't hear anything from his promoter, his publicist. We don't hear anything from Andre Durrell's camp. His coach, his management, himself, nothing. You know, give us something. You know what I mean? If something is physically wrong with you, you're going to say, hey, you know what? There's something physically wrong with me. I may not. I don't know. I'm going to the doctor today. Right. I'm doing something. Right. You keep it in a hush-hush for for a certain amount of time. And the hush-hush is this, is that when the hush-hush was due, okay, when it was ready to paint on the wall, guess what? You came with no cans to paint the house. You left the workers there, standing there for 8 hours with pay. That's what makes fight fans pissed off, and that's what makes fight fans question your intentions with the sport, is that you left us hanging, brother. You left us hanging. You're making us hitchhike to the next fight, which is Green versus Johnson. A lot of us were looking forward to the Ward-Durrell fight.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was. You know, a lot of people said it was a bad style matchup, and to me, I just like watching Andre Ward work, and I thought Durrell, the saddest thing, if this is true, is that in the Arthur Abraham fight, we watched a fighter, much like we did with Andre Ward in his first few fights, we watched a guy grow up right before our eyes, turn in the most mature, complete
right.
performance of his career. He was falling apart a little bit at the end, but I kind of looked at it like Vlad Klitschko against Sam Peter the first time, where he was kind of putting it together, but then there was some serious bumps in the road, and he just needed to get across that finish line. And then the next fight, he'd be even better for it. And he got robbed of that by a dirty blow while he was on the ground from Arthur Abraham. I'm one of the people that actually believes he was not faking, that he was knocked out, and he was really hurt. And if that is true, and he's sitting there shaking, and his legs are trembling, and he didn't know what was going on, that's the one thing about this sport. You can call a touchdown back. You can check the replay and call back a last, a buzzer beater, basket. You can't take a knockout back. That is mileage that is always going to be on you. And
absolutely.
It's really unfair, and it's really sad if it's true that he's permanently damaged, The brain is one of the great mysteries of the world, man. There's so much we don't know about it. And a knockout can come back to you years later. You never know, A lot of guys don't even really see the how bad off they are until they're out of the sport and they stop training and they stop keeping their body in tip-top condition, and then the damage sets in. Look at, Muhammad Ali. So we'll see, but like
that's a little bit of Parkinson's disease, though. That's a little bit of Parkinson's,
That's Parkinson's syndrome. But he doesn't have Parkinson's disease. He has Parkinson's syndrome, which is similar
Parkinson's
to the
syndrome.
Disease.
But that has nothing to do with boxing. I got to disagree on that.
Absolutely, absolutely it does. In my opinion, I'm not a doctor, but the reason they call it a syndrome is because it's like the disease, but it's not the disease. He has the symptoms of and all the problems of, but it was brought on, in their opinion, by something outside of the sport, i.e. fighting on way too long, dropping weight the way he did, particularly in the Holmes fight where he took steroids and hormones to drop his weight unnaturally. He didn't sweat through most of that fight, and a lot of people think that was a fight that did way too much damage to him.
But a lot of fighters did that, though, Gabriel. I mean, if that was the case, then a lot of fighters would have, Parkinson's syndrome, and they don't.
Yeah.
Muhammad Ali is a figure that is the only one that has it, and that's why I tend to lean in this case. No, because I'm going to tell you why that I disagree with it, because I've heard that a lot of times with non-fight fans, where people go, boxing is a terrible sport because you can get Parkinson's disease or syndrome. That's like saying I'm going to get AIDS because I sit on a toilet seat.
Well, but you could also get what they call what Jerry Quarry had, which was pugilistic dementia, which is you stay around too long, you take too many punches to the squash, and the squash gets squashed, and it gets permanently damaged. I mean, look at Meldrick Taylor.
But that's not Parkinson, though.
But it is still brain damage.
Absolutely, but it's not Parkinson. That's my whole thing. It's not Parkinson syndrome or disease. It's something else. You're getting hit in the head, which is not natural. When I've seen kids come into the gym, and right now even in Northern California is a big half of the state where MMA is a fab. Okay, and the reason why it is because, and I explain it. As a person, when you're born, what's the first thing that you do? You crawl. You don't punch. You don't take a punch. You crawl. That's a natural thing. That's why it's more natural for us to do MMA, grappling, jiu-jitsu, crawling around the floor, because it's more natural for our bodies. But taking a punch in the face, in the body, slipping a punch is not natural. You got to retrain your instincts. You got to retrain your body to do that. That's why it's so difficult. That's why it's such a difficult sport.
No, I agree with that. I mean, it's, you're going against fight or flight. You know, it's the most unnatural thing in the world to stand there and make you miss by an inch and then hit back. It really is. I don't know. You know, it's an interesting, you know, other debate. I mean, because Freddie Roach is another guy. I believe it's Parkinson's syndrome that he has, not the disease. And he's another guy that hung around for a few fights too many. I mean,
I think he has the disease, though, because he does have to take medication, if I remember correctly.
But so does Ali. I mean, but I'm not sure how his is classified. Steve might actually know the answer to that, if it's the disease or the syndrome. But I don't think there's any question that Ali stayed around for far too long and took beatings much different than the guys do today. You know, I mean, he was one fighting 15-round fights. He wasn't a big knockout puncher, so he generally went rounds. You know, I don't even know how many rounds he had, but it's a
lot
more than
the norm. And you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And you know what? Yes, up, brother.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off, man. I don't think that punch caused that, man. I don't think that Abraham punch caused that. If there's something wrong with him, I don't think that punch caused it.
Well, you know, the thing is,
it's always an accumulation, you know. It's always an accumulation of blows over the years, you know. It could be a simple thing as a tear on the brain or a little bit of a blood vessel that breaks and you don't even know you're a walking time bomb, you know. And all it takes is a few more blows, your brain rattles around. I mean, you think about what happens in a fight. Somebody hits you with a right hook. You get hit on the left side of your head, twisting your head to the right. Well, your brain, boom, rattles around in your head, and that's the big argument about, you know, the weigh-in day. Same day weigh-ins versus, you know, 24 hours to rehydrate. It's because your brain is carrying a lot of the fluid and water in your body, and when you dehydrate on the day of, and you don't have but, you know, a few hours to rehydrate, well, guess what's going to take the most damage is your brain.
Brain.
You know? So,
when he went to the hospital that night, they said originally that he didn't have a concussion.
Right.
That same night or whatever.
Exactly.
And they said he did have a concussion. So, I mean,
I wonder about that too, because it's degrees of concussion. You know, the concussion is a trauma to the head. You know, and these guys basically take traumas to the head. Like in sparring sessions, a few of them, I felt like I had a concussion. You know. A little bit sleepy, a little bit lightheaded, can't quite think straight for a day or two. Never go to the doctor because I'm one of those guys that just puts mud on it and keeps going. But, but
are you sure it's mud or is it called the Jimmy?
You know what that's called? my dad's thing. I just put mud on it. You know, you'll be fine. But you never know. I mean, I could have been concussed, you know, and you certainly felt like it. I didn't want to go to sleep, so I went to the bar. But, you know, it's hard to say. Everybody's brain's different. And I remember something, and I don't really know Andre. You know, I've met him once, interviewed him once. But from other people I've heard over the years that he is a bit of an erratic guy, that he's kind of moody, he's kind of different. And I almost wonder, you know, when there's brain trauma with certain people and it's permanent, particularly in fighters or violent people, there was a study done on serial killers and how the front of their brain – the part that handles impulse control and anger control, that's the part that generally is damaged by child abuse when you're a young kid. And that often can lead to impulse control problems and anger control problems later on. And I wonder, you know, years of taking a jab to the front of your brain, which is where that part is, I wonder, you know, it just opens up more questions to me.
No,
I tell you what, if he comes out within the next couple of months and has a fight date for January or February, we know this was a bunch of bullshit.
Hey, that's the thing is that he had the back injury, but 3 weeks down the line, there's no back injury. D, I'm going to put you on hold again.
Yeah. All right.
And all right. Stuff, because we got a bunch of other stuff and stuff. But
should I bring in Mr. Kim?
bring in Mr. Kim, and I'm going to let everybody know right now, the lines are going to be open as soon as Mr. Kim is off the show. We're going to give away two pair of tickets to the October 15th, Eloy Perez is headlining with Randy Caballero on the undercard. We're going to send two people out to the Fantasy Springs, California Casino, and they can enjoy the fights. This is our way of giving back to the fight fans that listen to the show, that want to keep boxing alive, that want to, you know, show, hey, you know what, boxing is still here to stay. So please call in. You know, and we got a great show happening. We've got Steve Kim coming on right now to talk a little bit about boxing, state of boxing right now. Then we got Alfonso Gomez, Jesse Vargas. We got Urbano Antaleon, who's going to be calling in and speaking to us about his upcoming fight with Humberto Soto. You know, Alfonso Gomez rapping in the conference call and et cetera, et cetera, saying he's going to KO Chavez. He's going to take us out of our misery. Of a guy right now that is in the royal family, Julio Cesar Chavez Sr., a great Mexican champion. So, if you want to call in, yeah,
we are here. We are here with Mr. Steve Kim.
Hey, Steve, how you doing, brother?
Guys, good Friday to you guys.
Good Friday to you, man.
Good Friday, exactly, man. So, hey, Steve. Really, really quick, man. I want to hear your thoughts about the Super Six. Is it in shambles right now? Is it hurting? Is there enough to rebuild it? I mean, is it something Showtime is going to want to redo because of all the personalities that were involved in it in the first time?
Well, I mean, it's, like I said today in my article, No More Mr. Nice Guy, I kind of went through this issue at length. It's hard to call it the Super Six when half of your contestants have gone exit stage left. You're basically left with a couple of fighters, and I think there's one lesson learned here. If you're going to do a tournament, make sure that none of those fighters involved are with Al Heyman. I don't think he can be trusted. I really don't. And is it in shambles? I don't think there's any doubt. As of right now, we don't know who Andre Ward's going to fight November 27th. You know, we hope that the other fight between the European guys is going to go on. Kessler, who was one of the bigger names, is no longer there. Jermaine Taylor was always a questionable thing. Guy that was added in there, you know, it was during a stretch where the biggest problem we had at one point was that there was no Lucien Bouté. That seems like 10 years ago.
Right.
There's a lot that's happened to it. I'm a fan of the concept. I like what they tried to do. It was innovative. It was new. But I think we're finding out that, you know what, maybe Bob Arum is right. Maybe single elimination tournaments are the way to go, because no matter what your intentions are, if you have people involved who do not have those same intentions, who are left to their own devices and are somehow empowered, they will blow it up. It is that simple.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it smart right now for Showtime or any of the promoters to try to bring in another fighter? I mean, bringing another fighter seems to me to be a little bit more confusion, a little bit more of the same road that we're going at the moment, which is dealing with personalities, dealing with new, wantings. You know, and they're going to want something out of this tournament. You know what I mean? It just doesn't seem fair.
Here's the thing. I'm all for more fights. I don't like broadcasts. We have one fight at the HBO Showtime level. Listen, do I really believe that Glenn Johnson, Alan Green will have that much of an effect on the Super Six? No, but it's still a good fight because Glenn Johnson's involved. And it adds an interesting sidelight, at least an appetizer, to Juan Ma Lopez and Rafael Marquez. Now, Andre Ward is a draw in Oakland, and I think that's good for business if he goes back there. He's already on to the semifinals. The one thing that I have liked about the Super Six guys, we got good fights. We had guys who lost their zeros. We had stars emerge. You can say a lot of things, even if you're against the Super Six, that it was unrealistic, that it was idealistic, and that it didn't work. I won't disagree with that. But I dare anyone to tell me that we didn't see compelling stuff. Now, at the end of the day, if we end up with the winner of this fight coming up between Carl Franck and Arthur Abraham eventually fighting Andre Ward under any format, wouldn't you guys want to see that as boxing fans?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Two things, Steve. One, Dan Raphael came out with his story about the Super Six, about particularly Andre Durell and what's going on with him. His camp says that he's injured, he's got neurological damage possibly. So I'm curious what your take is on that. And also, why would you say that don't have Al Heyman involved if you're going to do a tournament?
Well, I think it speaks for itself. If you read the story today, that's under my main story on Richard Schaefer, No More Mr. Nice Guy. You know, it's one thing to have the uncle or the trainer or someone within Durrell's family say that Andre Durrell has all these neurological symptoms. You know what I didn't hear from was a doctor. I didn't hear from any doctor. Didn't hear from Dr. J, Dr. Doolittle, Dr. Feelgood. I thought it was very strange on that conference call yesterday with Showtime's boxing czar, Ken Hirschman, that he didn't even know what the ailment was, and he told us that we as the media are going to have to find out.
Wow.
You're telling me that a network that threw in multi-millions of dollars in marketing and production for 360 and the fight purses and financed this tournament wouldn't do their due diligence? And you could just hear and see and feel the irritation in Ken Hirschman's voice that this is something that was shoved down his throat. Again, where is the real documentation that there was some sort of injury? Now, if he is going through neurological problems, okay, and we care about the safety of all fighters, and Andre Durrell's safety is the most paramount thing on our minds, as it should be, right? Shouldn't he be suspended by every single commission for at least 1 year, made to go through a battery of tests, and then reexamined? That's all I'm saying. And my question, I brought this up in my article, if you guys are advising fighters, okay, why are you scheduling fights if you have a client who's going through neurological issues? Why was it last week when we were at the Conga Room at the LA Live, for the Bantamweight tournament, I did two on-camera interviews with Ken Hirschman of Showtime and Gary Shaw, the promoter of record, with Andre Durrell. They both told me that announcement was forthcoming very soon, perhaps by the end of that week, that they would finally have a venue for Ward Durrell.
Wow.
Why was it in early September when the fight was originally scheduled for the 25th of that month, and it was reported by several entities that Showtime sent a legal letter to both sides saying, if you guys do not engage in a fight, you will be under breach. Now, don't you think that's a strange tack to take against a fighter that has quote-unquote neurological issues?
It is. It is. I mean, I can't seem, just like yourself, I just can't seem to figure it out. And that's what puzzled me the most. And the thing is that a lot of these management teams, like Al Heyman, they think that we're stupid. We can read the fine line. It's not going to happen. Why didn't you do this? If you're going to cover something up, why not be good at doing that, covering it up?
You know, that's a good question. We're talking about a fight dropping out, not the Kennedy assassination. And I just think part of our job as the media is...
Well, that would be a lot more easier to cover up than the Kennedy assassination, right?
No, you're right about that. But my question is, maybe it's just not all that important. I mean, let's face it. If you told most boxing fans, hey, I'm depriving you of an Andre Durrell fight, do you think most people would really give a damn? I think what people are
well,
upset about here is...
Obviously it does because you see a lot of people very upset about this because it was anticipated. This was a fight, really, honestly. Let's really take this back. Andre Durrell, Andre Ward was a fight to really see who is the best American, not who is the best at 168 in the world, who is the best American. People wanted to see that because of the fact that a lot of people want an American. They need a hero.
Well, Dave, what I think, I agree with you to a point, but I've always said the thing about Andre Durrell and Andre Ward, the reluctance to fight because they were such good buddies back in the amateurs. I've always said about that fight, they should fight. No one's going to get hurt. Just look at the participants involved.
Right.
You know, my point is I think people are upset that this fight is not happening because of the overall principality of it all, is that most fans enjoyed and wanted and yearned for a Super 6 concept. Best fighting the best. It's a league concept to a certain degree. And the fact that people are now just blatantly expunging it with their own agendas, I think that's what upsets people, is the principality of it, not absolutely that one fight. I don't know why they did this. There is a line of thought, and again, I don't want to go all Oliver Stone, but I want to go Oliver Stone. There's a line of thought, and I've talked to a few people in the industry, that they believe that, again, HBO's in the super middleweight business with Lucien Bouté. Well, the guy needs a couple of opponents, not named Jesse Brinkley. Well, Al Heyman does a lot of business. The other Al Heyman, Home Box Office, not the Heyman Boxing Organization. But if you bring over Andre Ward and, let's say, Andre Durell, and if you blow up this concept and Showtime just raises their hands and says, forget it, we're not doing this anymore, well, now all of a sudden, these guys have an underground railroad to HBO who has a bigger paycheck. And, you know, I quoted a major figure in boxing who emailed me anonymously and said, we shouldn't be stunned if Andre Durell miraculously gets better after the Super Six is over. I can just imagine now them setting up this thing where Benny Hinn with an Everlast boxing glove will touch the head of Andre Durell, and it's a miracle. He's healed, and he can go on to face anyone but Andre Ward in the Super Six. I just think that the Durell people, there's a lot of heat on them now. It's going to be funny because if they really want to play this to the hilt, he better not step into the ring for another year. Because, again, guys, if you're advising or managing a fighter, if they had, like, post-concussion syndrome, would you allow them to fight within 90 days if these symptoms are that bad?
You know what? The sad part about it is I hear what you're saying, but the sad part about it, Steve, is that a lot of these managers – you know, they just didn't take that one-on-one of what you're saying right now. It's going to exactly happen what you're saying they shouldn't do. They're going to do the exactly opposite. You know, it's like that preacher over and over and over and over again. He gets busted, and guess what? He's still back in the church. That's exactly what's going to happen. He's going to take us back to church.
But there's an important distinction, though. Al Heyman seems to have an incredible amount of influence that is mystifying to me. If you go through his list of clients and the amount of money that they get in terms of a license fee, the latest example is Andre Berto, Freddy Hernandez, being for some reason being worth $1.25 million. Freddy Hernandez, a Showbox Telefutura level fighter, in a circumstance where they're not going to add one ticket sale to that November 27th card between Marquez and Katsidis.
Yes.
And if you look at the amount of mismatches, I mean, he's got enough influence to have Antonio Tarver on Showbox against Nagy Aguilera. I don't understand how he gets the power. Aram has described him as Machiavelli, but I don't. You say that other managers will do it, but let me tell you something, guys. Most other managers, in fact, no other manager, from what I know, have this empowerment from certain networks. They simply don't.
You know, in that vein, Oscar De La Hoya, speaking of empowered by HBO, you know the history a lot better than I do. The relationship between HBO and Golden Boy. Why is it that, you know, Oscar came in and made his statements about how Golden Boy wanted to take over boxing and how they should basically run the whole thing. If you could just explain to us how that relationship began.
The relationship between HBO and Golden Boy really began, if you remember that, there was a divorce between Top Rank and Oscar De La Hoya shortly after the first Shane Mosley fight in June of 2000. And Bob Arum had one of the great comments of all time. He said, Oscar, he ran from Trinidad, he ran from Mosley, he ain't running from me. You know what? That's exactly what happened. And if you remember, they formed their own company. HBO gave him an exclusive output deal with a network that I think is, I don't even know if it's still, how many of you still have it, but HBO Latino, okay? It was Boxeo de Oro, I think if that was correct, the term for that series. And then as they had another divorce, Golden Boy and Top Rank finally had their complete falling out in 2004 because you have to remember, Oscar thought he could use, I think, Jerry Parencio in Univision as his promoter. That didn't work out. They ended up going back to Top Rank around 2002 and 3 and 4. But as they had their final divorce and Oscar was still a pay-per-view titan, HBO wanted to be in the Oscar De La Hoya business because he was doing unbelievable pay-per-view numbers even then against Ricardo Mayorga and the like. And as we headed into 2007 and 8, They made an output deal, an exclusive output deal, because, number one, I think there was a couple reasons. They did not want to deal with Bob Arum or Don King. They did not want to deal with specific promoters. Number two, they felt that De La Hoya, by keeping everything in-house, would make things a lot easier, and they gave Oscar the output deal. And then a funny thing happened to Oscar. Manny Pacquiao happened. And it turned out that now you've given all these dates up front without even Oscar De La Hoya providing the economic stimulus he did once a year. Because I've always said Oscar De La Hoya's pay-per-view numbers, they've saved jobs. There's no doubt about that. But there's a bigger alarming trend where I think, again, HBO is very guilty. HBO is the company that had allowed fighters to, in essence, quote, unquote, cut out the middleman, which means the real promoter that developed and invested in fighters. And they started letting fighters like Lennox Lewis, Roy Jones, Prince Ahmed, and down the line, create their own promotional companies, with Oscar being obviously the biggest and most influential. Now, on the surface, guys, that's not bad, because it's always great when the fighter makes all the money, so it's not a hard luck story. However, there's something very unfair about a promoter that sticks 7-8 years into a fighter and develops these fighters, pays them a stipend, gives them signing bonuses, expertly matches them. Where do they get? Where do they go? If you start cutting out real promoters, who develops the talent? Because the bottom line is, when Winky Wright Promotions was alive, they could promote their one card. But that company's not even alive anymore. And this is what Kathy Dews has been saying for years. You want to cut us out of the business, it's okay for the first 5-6 years. But the problem is, who is going to be able to invest in young fighters to create the next generation of stars?
Exactly.
And I think that is the problem that I've had with HBO, is that they have completely changed the paradigm of the business for the worse.
Well, Steve, let me ask you this then. I mean, okay, they're doing this whole trend here. How could they not now look at what's happening? I mean, how could they not see their numbers being it's obviously falling, and the sport of boxing is obviously hurting in what they're doing as a business. My whole rant last week was about the fact that boxing seems to have a mentality of get all we can get out of the first-time buyer rather than having return customers.
I don't disagree. I mean, again, you know, what is that old saying? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. I think that in HBO, I think that there has been a severe downgrade in programming and boxing knowledge since the regime switched. When you had Lou DiBella, you had a guy who was a boxing guy. Lou DiBella cared about boxing. He was a guy that was there before the writers were to watch almost every single undercard fight. Now you have Kerry Davis, who only goes to certain fights if that city has a good golf course. And he doesn't really like the fights, and he'll probably show up right before the first bout when the telecast begins, but won't watch any of the untelevised undercard when you have your future prospects on board. Back then, you also had a guy by the name of Seth Abraham, who wasn't a true boxing guy, but had a certain vision. He had a certain philosophy, and he understood how to run a sports department. Ross Greenberg is a great producer and director. And the bottom line is, he really doesn't like boxing, and he doesn't like boxing people, and he cares more about the Emmys and his trophy case than about boxing fans. Guys, I am not allowed to talk to HBO people. I'm not. And that's just the bottom line. I've been banned from there a year and a half ago. I know Ross Greenberg tried to have lunch with me. He had Todd DeBove ask me if I'd want to have kind of like a peacemaking session. I didn't go for it because I kind of live with myself. I'm not going to be a phony. But if I had one question to ask the current regime at HBO, it'd be very simple. Do you care about your subscribers and the boxing fans, or do you care more about your relationships with people like Golden Boy and Al Haymon? That would be the one question I would ask them.
Well, isn't it true that Al Haymon and Kerry Davis were roommates back in college?
No, the story that I've heard is the reason why I don't think they were roommates in college. I have never heard that. The reason why I hear that Kerry Davis is such a lackey for Al Heyman is that Kerry Davis, before he came on to the HBO sports department back in the late 90s, I believe in 97 or 98, under the direction of Lou DiBella, who broke him in, he was in the music or entertainment business. If you know anything about Al Heyman's background, is he was a very, very influential and powerful concert promoter.
Right.
So when Al Heyman came on the scene, and I believe his first major fighter was Vernon Forrest, okay, right off the bat, Kerry Davis, I don't want to say he worshipped or idolized Al Heyman, but he certainly had a lot of respect for him. And again, you could say that my opinions are crazy. You could say that I am a conspiracy theorist. But again, look at the fighters that Al Heyman represents. Look at the type of matchups they get and the amount of money they are paid in comparison to other fighters and managers. And I think you'll be hard-pressed to tell me with a straight face that there is not an unlevel playing field.
Would you think that played into the catch weight that Paul Williams was able to get against the middleweight champion of the world? I mean, considering Lou has Andre Berto and Al Heyman manages both him and Paul Williams. Is that a leap?
Again, Al Heyman's a powerful man. And I say don't blame Al Heyman. Blame the people that empower him because, you know what, guys? Maybe if we were Al Heyman, we'd probably do the same thing.
Absolutely.
Our jobs as managing fighters would be find the easiest fight for the most amount of money, not find the hardest fight and don't get paid at all. But to your point, Gabe, yes, that there are times because of a cross-pollination of the influences of Al Heyman that, yeah, one hand washes the other. Like, if you think about it, if you're Dan Goosen, who I like but has kind of become a puppet, and my new nickname for him is Lamb Chop, because when it comes to anything related to Al Heyman, you don't know if he's ever going to tell you the truth ever again. But in a situation where Paul Williams is concerned, the real promoter is Al Heyman. So when it came to the Ward Durrell fight, the bottom line was, could Dan Goosen really play hardball with Andre Ward against Andre Durrell, knowing that if he did, that's going to affect his relationship with not only Paul Williams but Chris Areola. And I just found it interesting that Sergio Martinez is the middleweight champion, beats Kelly Pavlik, was involved in the fight of the year. You talk to anyone remotely close to that situation with Sergio Martinez, he is the definite B-side, and they got dictated to. And the proof that you really need is we're fighting for the linear middleweight champion of the world, championship of the world, at 157 pounds. Do I need to say anything
more?
No, you don't.
It makes no sense.
It makes no
I'm curious, Steve, too, just kind of jumping back to the Super 6, how is it that Mikkel Kessler was able to pull out with an injury? How was he able to prove that and avoid litigation? And will Andre Durrell have to go through the same thing?
I would certainly hope so. Now, I didn't keep so much track of it, but did Kessler provide verification? I believe he did,
yeah. I'm kind of the same boat with you. I'm not as close to that camp as
I mean, here's another thing, though, guys, and I wrote about this in that article. Andre Durrell, I was wondering, like, wow, they went to a brain injury. And I finally figured it out. They already used their back injury card back in March. Because if you remember, the Abraham fight was originally scheduled for the Agua Calientes in Southern California.
Right.
And then we have the largest concentration of Armenian Americans in this country in Southern California.
Absolutely.
And I've been told by very good sources that Andre Durrell, his back injury was that he backed out of the location, and it ended up in Michigan.
Yeah.
So, again, I think track record is big here, guys. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
If he's injured for real, he is. But you know what? Can we get some verification? And I just find it very strange that Ken Hirschman says, we don't know what the injury is. You guys kind of have to find out.
Right.
Really? Why?
Right.
You're the one who put the money into this tournament, not us.
If anything, you would want to find out himself. He puts all the money up, and you're putting your neck out there. Why don't you find out? Hey, Steve. You know, I know you're always pressing for time, but before I let you go, I do want to talk a little bit about this. Interview with Oscar De La Hoya, the whole Monopoly thing. Should we be surprised? And is it good for boxing that he pretty much wants to do what Dana White is doing with MMA?
Well, I mean, it would be horrible for the fighters. I mean, if everyone, you know, that's the whole thing. Like, we got to care about the fighters. If you're a fighter, do you really want one promoter to deal with? Wages would go down. And here's the thing. First of all, I don't believe in monopolies. Last I checked, we don't live in Moscow. I don't live in Cuba. We have a capitalistic society. And here's the thing. Golden Boy, as of yet, has not shown a track record of being able to develop and nurture talent like Top Rank and Main Events in the past.
Right.
To me, that's what we need. We don't need one entity, just like we don't need one championship belt or one sanctioning body. Anyone that says that, I'm sorry, you need to go read a different book than Boxing for Dummies, okay? we need more farmers. We need people that can cultivate draws throughout the country. I mean, think about it. If you look at other markets away from the United States, boxing is actually doing well, Dave. It is. It's doing well throughout Europe,
absolutely,
well throughout Canada, well throughout Asia. And you know what? It's not one entity. You have promoters. They're doing it the right way. They don't have this obvious network influence like
yeah.
we have out here. And, you know, from a promoter standpoint, so here's the thing. Let's not kid ourselves. As much as I like Bob Arum or Kathy Duva or Gary Shaw or Cedric Kushner, and I have good relations with all these people, what these individuals all like to have a control and to have what Golden Boy has and have their own quasi-monopoly? Absolutely. Of course they would, just like Apple or Microsoft or Nike would in their respective fields. But I think what people are missing is that even when King and Arum were at their best slash worst, guys, they were never actually sponsored in their efforts by HBO or
right.
any other network. Not saying that they didn't have their own little situations, because everyone tells me before I was even really into boxing as a kid, King and Arum basically had their monopolies with ABC, CBS, and NBC. But I'm just saying that the big story is not that Oscar said what he said. I thought people completely missed the boat. The bigger story is that Oscar's vision is actually happening through the auspices of HBO, who steers free agents, talk to anyone in the business off the record, and they'll tell you that, to Golden Boy. And when you have dates and you're able to reach out to people saying, do you want to make this fight? Well, you have an incredible amount of leverage when it's your date. You know, I'm just saying that we have to look that Oscar is obviously just a figurehead, and he probably understands the concept, and I don't think there's any doubt. If you read my article today, Richard Schaefer, who I get along with very well, flat out said, we will aggressively pursue any free agents. So they're actually telling you, we're not in the development business. We're going to let you develop the fighter for us, and then we're going to be able to pay him a lot more than you are for one reason. We didn't spend 7 years of our time and money to cultivate this product.
So
and
so
it's not a bad business plan if you have the backing of a network like HBO.
So is it fair to say that they're doing the modern mafia move and what they did back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, you know, which is basically, you know, a maneuver when you've already developed a fighter. They moved in, they put the money, they fronted it out, and they made the most out of everything.
Yeah, and by the way, mafia, that was the last monopoly in boxing. And, boy, for everyone that says Oscar actually has a good idea and we should have one, how did that work out, guys? That was amazing that people actually were like saying, oh, my God, Oscar's onto something. Is they really? The stupidity of certain people really amazes me sometimes. It really does. With all respect to everybody, even the stupid people who believe that. Here's the thing about Golden Boy. Golden Boy is going to be around, and they've actually done some good things that I like. I do. I have a good relationship with that company. I like the fact they are trying to go a little bit more grassroots. But if you're telling me the only way you can succeed is to drive everybody out, that's bad. I'm sorry. Boxing, for 80, 90 years, when it was still a marquee sport, it wasn't just a niche activity that we cared about once a month. We had a lot of promoters. We did. It wasn't just one guy. We had dominant organizations. But for all those people that try to compare boxing to other sports, like, well, geez, the Major League Baseball is like that. Major League Baseball is like that, but we have 30-some-odd owners. NFL, we have 32 franchises, all
right.
independently owned and operated. The NBA,
exactly.
Jerry Buss owns only one team. Donald Sterling owns the other one in L.A. I think people are confusing the need for some sort of uniformity for
exactly
a monopoly,
right.
And I think that's a whole separate issue.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, you and I always talk about this, the leagues versus the way it is now, and that's the thing. It's just a uniformity. a way of, you know, you look at the single elimination tournament, these guys are all working together, and that's really how it should be. All these guys develop these talents on their own. Now they're come to the point where they can make some big money, but the only way to do that is to fight against other promoters' fighters who have also been developed the same way, are ready to make the same big money. That everybody benefits from the fans to the fighters to the promoters in the sport. Having, you know, a company that hasn't even proven that they can develop a talent, not a free agent, but a talent from square one, taking over the sport, really scares the hell out of me, especially when HBO is doing the things that they're doing in conjunction with them.
Yeah.
That's the way the sport's going to get killed. Really, no,
what do you mean? You know what HBO stands for is Heyman's Box Office.
Yeah, or the Heyman Boxing Organization.
There you go.
You know, I'm just saying, when Andre Berto, and again, I don't want to make this into the Andre Berto bashing session, but the guy's getting paid well enough. He can take it, okay? But Freddie Hernandez, he's going to get paid right around $1 million for that. Freddie Hernandez is not a bad fighter, but he's at a certain level. Freddie Hernandez is a type of guy that if you're Andre Berto, he shouldn't be your eighth appearance on HBO. He should have been your first or second. That's just my point. By the eighth appearance,
right,
I need you to be fighting someone who is a legitimate threat.
Right.
And that's just my opinion. If Freddie Hernandez was your introduction to HBO, I'd say, wow, that's a good step-up fight. That's a plausible opponent. You know, it's better than Nito Bravo. It's like better than Michael Trabant. But we're talking about a young man here who, at the beginning of the year, was going to fight Shane Mosley. All right. Then he decided to be his own one-man Greenpeace and play humanitarian to Haiti. That's fine. We all make decisions. But I heard he got paid pretty well, no matter what they say. I've had this argument with Lou DiBella more than once. When they negotiated their way out of the second opportunity to fight Shane Mosley in September, Lou kept saying, we're not taking 40%, we're not going to fight in L.A., and I'm not giving up the undercut slot. I argued to Lou, I said, Lou, you're still really nobody. You could not sell out a phone booth in Florida. You sold less than 1,000 tickets. And what happens is when you overpay fighters for a long time, it makes certain fights almost impossible to make.
Right.
And you create monsters. And this is what's happened here with Andre Berto. And I've told Lou, and Lou disagrees, but I've always said there are certain deals, even if you don't like them, as they say out in the street, there are certain deals you can't afford not to take. Because
right,
the payoff is not taking 40% against Mosley, even though you think you deserve 50-50. The payoff comes in beating Shane Mosley. And I couldn't help but think, as I'm watching this next to Gabe, Shane Mosley putting on, you know, not exactly the most exciting fight against Sergio Mora. I said, wow, that should be Andre Berto out there right now, taking the mantle, taking the bull by the horns, and parlaying this. But now, even if you beat Shane Mosley sometime next year, that Mora Mosley fight devalued Shane Mosley going
exactly
into that fight.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, that moment of getting your glory has passed on. The torch is no longer lit. It's over.
Really,
all you're getting
really
is the smoke.
Nobody else will fill that slot either, because he's not going to fight an Al Heyman fighter. Really, you couldn't fight Paul Williams, who would be the only other guy that would go to 147 for a big fight. Who else is there to beat at 147? He's got to now have to wait till the 140-pounders get there. And he's basically kind of like a Larry Holmes without anybody to fight. He doesn't have any respect from the fans, even though he's got some talent. And he's got nobody to define his championship. His championship is defined by the weak talent that he's taken on.
Right. I mean, you're talking about a guy who, you know, I think he's kind of admitted, I think, in different interviews, you know, I kind of grab and hold now because it's a safer way to fight and I'm getting paid a lot of money. I have to tell you, that doesn't engender a lot of interest to me. It really doesn't. And I've argued about this with people that when you say that the sanctioning bodies are the number one problem with boxing, and I say, yeah, I guess if HBO better be the guys on top of your list because they created this. And, you know, I've said this. It's interesting. If you look at Al Heyman's situation, and this is just a fact, and I know certain people, they hyperventilate every time Jose Suleiman gives out a silver emeritus pentacontinental belt. I don't think they make any difference at all, but if you look at the history of Paul Williams fighters on premium cable, the only time they're ever in really good fights is when the WBC mandates it. It was Louis Collazo. Berto was a good fight. You know who
right
made that fight? It wasn't HBO. It was the WBC. And you look at Paul Williams, probably his second or one of his two good fights was basically mandated by the WBO. He was a mandatory to Antonio Margarito. So I think people have to look at the facts sometimes, and they really don't do that. They want to keep living off of this one stereotype or this one belief, no matter how untrue it may be. But is it kind of scary, though, that Jose Suleiman's doing more to press under Al Heyman clients in tougher fights than actually Kerry Davis? That's a scary thought to me, isn't it?
Well, the WBO did that with Purog versus Kenny Jacobs as well.
Yes. You're absolutely right. They were the number one and two. They were the highest rated available contenders. And I think what happened was, because I had seen tapes of Pirog. I even predicted Pirog to win that fight because I thought he was a big, strong, tough guy. I thought Danny Jacobs, I don't want to say that he was a fraud, but to a large degree, he was like Milli Vanilli. He was lip-syncing. He really was. They fought a lot of welterweights, and he was made to look better than he really was.
Absolutely.
And I think they felt as though that they were getting a German version of Patrick Charpentier. They really did, or Ricky Frazier. I remember watching that fight, and by the middle of the first round, I think Emmanuel Stewart, who has a sharp eye, obviously, said, Jacobs' body language is very telling to me. Yeah, Emmanuel, you're absolutely right. He was in a real fight, and Jacobs had no clue how to handle this guy.
Yeah, he looks completely confused.
Yep, he did.
He didn't want to be there. I think even Williams-Martinez might have been a WBO-mandated fight, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, we'd have to look on that. And by the way, guys, some news that looks like it's official now, but Tim Bradley has signed on, so January 29th, make your plans. He will be fighting Devin Alexander. I got that from Gary Shaw. I talked to Kevin Cunningham. They have signed their deal with Don King. And I believe that the four venues that are being mentioned prominently for this fight is Atlanta, Detroit, New Orleans, and even St. Louis.
Wow. All right. Well, Steve, always a pleasure. I mean, obviously, I'm going to see you probably pretty soon. I know you're on your way to the fights. Really want to thank you for coming on and just dropping some knowledge on us.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime. We'll make this a regular thing.
Cool. Sounds good to me.
All right, Dave. Have a great weekend. Gabe, I'll see you later.
All right, brother. Take it easy. Well, there you have it, folks. That was Steve Kim from MaxBoxing.com. That is the guy I've been working with for about 2 years now. It's been kind of enlightening me on the sport, and you know, it's kind of bit of an apprenticeship. I think Dave has disappeared from the line, so I am flying as blind as hell.
I'm here. I was saying that if you want to follow Steve Kim, you can on his Twitter, Steve Max Boxing, and you can follow him.
I think you're on mute or something. I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry. Also, yeah, you can catch Steve, on Max Boxing every Monday. He does a feature. He writes constantly throughout the week, and his email is down at the bottom, caninekim@yahoo.com. He will answer you back.
Yeah, he will. You know, and a lot of stuff that he said, you know, I know a lot of people, you're going to have to archive. It was a lot of information, definitely a lot of information, I've met Steve a few times, and he's an encyclopedia. You know, if you want to talk boxing, you're going to get what you're asking for, definitely, when you want to talk boxing. If you guys want to call in right now and talk a little bit about what we were talking about, and the phone lines are open to win some tickets, okay? I said one set. I didn't my PR just, you know, text me and say, hey, we're wrong. It's two sets of tickets to go see Eloy Perez and Randy Caballero at the Fantasy Springs in California. You can call in at 347-215-7598. You can call in and you can wear a couple of tickets, and you know, if you got you want a date, there you go right there, man. So you want to impress, take her out to the fights. Why not impress? Let's hit some fight fans on the line right now. Let's see, Anthony, he wants to talk about boxing versus MMA, recent fights cancellations and non-deserving prospects. What's up, brother? You're on the line right now on Leaving in the Ring.
What's up, Dave, man? What's going on, Leaving in the Ring cast? I just want to give you guys big props, first of all, for the radio show, keeping it locked down for the hardcore fight fans. I appreciate that big time.
Hey, man, I appreciate you calling in, brother, and listening and supporting us all the way. What can we talk about, man? What's the first one you want to go with?
Man, what I want to go with, what's going on with this boxing MMA thing? I mean, man, it seems to me I'm a hardcore boxing fan. I'll tell you guys this straight up. I love boxing. I grew up watching boxing ever since I was a little kid. To this day, boxing's in my heart. But it just seems like MMA, they're putting on better fights and better promotions. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
You know what's funny is that you want to go at this kid? Because I actually got a little bit of a story, but you can go ahead first.
I just had one question. Did you see their last big fight card? That was not better than any, it was not better than anything boxing's put on in a while. You know,
right.
It was,
the last UFC card, I didn't even watch it because Frank Mir on a pay-per-view, the headliner, come on. But their next one is good. I think it's going to be pretty good.
Well, I mean,
It's up and down, you know. It's like anything, you know. It can't be great all the time, and I don't think they have the talent pool that we do at the moment. I mean, if you look at UFC, not just MMA, but just UFC versus, you know, boxing, which is basically, you know, the, kind of the argument that UFC does it better than we do. It's just simply not true. You got to look at the rest of the world, the way we promote, you know, the Sauerland, all the European promoters do it so much better than they do it, and they do it in front of 50,000 people in a stadium. You know, and I mean, there was better fights last weekend, prospects fighting, some good-ass knockouts. What's that any day of the week? When boxing is at its peak, when it's a good fight, there's nothing better, in my opinion. Dave?
You know, I totally agree with that, but how come we're not seeing those fights? I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is like most of the public, like most of my friends nowadays are like, boxing, that was so, you know, 10, 15 years ago, where they're all getting into the UFC, and it just seems like they're promoting better. I mean, what can we do to step our game up? Because it just seems like the word is not getting out. Like,
I can tell right now, you're in the area code of 510. Where you at? You're in Hayward? I mean, what part of that area code in the Bay are you from?
Yeah, I'm in the Hayward, Fremont, Union City area.
Okay, there you go. That's the problem right there, you know? I mean, if you're in the Bay Area, you're basically in where the sport of MMA really grew out of. I mean, San Jose is – L.A. is considered – if you want to up your game, you go to L.A., you know, because there's so many gyms. You got the Maywood, you got, you know, a Wild Card, you got Fortune Gym. There's so many gyms out there where you can have a variety of different styles to kind of intertwine with each other so you can up your game. Well, go to San Jose or anywhere in the Bay Area to up your game as an MMA fighter. That's where you want to go. Strikeforce was developed out of the Bay Area. So a lot of times, the Strikeforce has more of a monopoly in Northern California than it does in Southern California. You know, the problem is, though, is this, and I've said this many a times. Before anybody was talking about this, I said, listen, there's really no money in MMA at the moment. But when the fighters start wising up to the game, there's going to be problems. And guess what? We're starting to see that. You know, not even, 2 weeks ago, PAD is starting to affect fighters in the MMA world. That's starting to turn up, you know. And Americans frown on certain things, you know. It doesn't stop them from watching. I mean, look at baseball, look at football. It doesn't stop them, but it does give them a reason to bitch, complain about it, you know. The thing about MMA, too, is that I was at a gym on, I believe it was Tuesday. I went down to a gym. I went to go see a smoker. The gym was an MMA-owned gym. I started talking to the owner and the trainer, and we started talking about MMA, and he said, man, boxing's dead. And I told him, are you sure about that? Have you not looked at your guys' pay-per-view fights? Have you guys not looked at your guys' fights? They're not delivering anymore. You know, it's starting at that stage where things are starting to fall apart. And he goes, man, you know what? You're absolutely right. The other thing, too, where I acknowledge with them, I say, hey, listen, look at your guys' amateur. They have an amateur program, okay? It's nothing like boxing. Their amateur program is almost similar to their pro program. You know, and when you got guys like that are going rough and tough, they're being damaged. When they got no screening and no way of really delivering and developing fighters, you're getting chop shops developing fighters. That's not a good idea to do for a sport that wants to uprise and take over a combat industry. Boxing is nowhere going to go. You know,
you got to look at it that way, too, is that that's actually a great point. And that, you know, our guys can do 200 fights because of the safety measures that are put in for amateur fighters with headgear, shorter fights. You know, stoppages aren't really the same thing in amateurs as they are in the pros. It's pretty rare to get a guy that just straight knocks people out. It's usually an accumulation, and they stop it before anything bad actually happens. But, you know, most of the people that tell me that argument, that MMA or UFC is killing boxing, aren't really knowledgeable about my sport. You know, what they're looking at is the big fights. They always say, well, who's going to be the next pay-per-view star? And you know, where are we going to go for the big super fights? And I'm a person that believes that this sport doesn't rise and fall on the big pay-per-view. You know, a lot of people are saying in October, like they said this to me yesterday, we were talking, that there's no fight this month. Well, I would beg to differ. You need to actually look at the schedule and see that there's tons of fights, hundreds of fights going on all over the world. If you go
but that's my point. Like, most people aren't, they're not seeing these fights. I don't think the promoters are doing, like, because they're not on the big networks, and I say, like,
well, see,
fights are throwing a lot of fights over and over and over. And people are starting to recognize these names nonstop. But also remember Gabe talking about,
that's the problem, though, Anthony. I mean, look, that's the problem with our sport right now. If you really look at it, it's a poor man's sport, okay? And how did this sport develop? It's by people that going out looking for the sport. Now, we're in a society where everybody wants everything set in their lap. You know what I mean? So it's very difficult to push a sport when fight fans are looking for it to be pushed in their face. Why don't we just take a step back and go, you know what, let me look for it. Just like the old days, you know, when we actually looked for a woman, we actually went out there and looked for a date. We didn't get on the internet and try to put ourselves out there in some type of network to get a date. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem with the sport right now.
I totally agree. I mean, I would love to see more fights on TV, you know, and good fights, because I personally think that a lot of the best fights are not being shown, and That's the problem right there.
Well, that problem could be corrected. That problem could be – I'm sorry, Gabe. Let me just make this point, and you can jump on. But that problem could be corrected right there, Anthony, if you as an individual decides to say, you know what, I'm going to go to this event. Forget that it's on TV. You got Thompson happening tonight, Blood Series. You got last night at the Tashi Palace. There's a lot of fights that are happening. Maybe in Northern California. Maybe it's not happening in Northern California. But you got in the Southern California that not that far. Maybe 2-3 hours away. Those added attendances makes a difference. And it makes a difference because it makes networks go, hey, you know what? We got something here. Let's put it on television. So it's very important as a fight fan, as a hardcore fight fan that wants to see the sport strive, is to really honestly help it out by being there, pushing it. You know what I mean? You can't make a marriage work if it's only one person in the marriage trying to make it work. Go ahead, Gabe.
Well, I just think, too, is that we need to – the sport right now is in a major change. I mean, you're starting to see things come to a head, like Andre Berto, like we're talking about. You know, he doesn't really have anybody to take the torch from anymore. You know, the sport also is coinciding with, I think more so than any other sport, with the growth of the internet. You know, I mean, newspapers turned away from this sport at the same time that network TV began to turn away from the sport. And it's slowly, you know, but surely being extinct in that format. And most people don't read the paper anyways. They go on the internet. And with guys like Steve Kim and Doug Fisher, Gary Randall, who they all started, you know, the House of Boxing, which later became Max Boxing, which are the first internet sites, really, about boxing, they've really kept it alive. And the sport has really changed in that sense, and that now it's going to the internet probably more than any other sport. You're starting to see pay-per-views on the internet, fights that are broadcast strictly on the internet. You know, Golden Boy, when they do the Fight Night Club, they do, you know, a live stream on Ustream and show the fights for free. And the model's kind of changing. And I think right now people need to be kind of patient and see that that is beginning to change, and that maybe even overseas promoters, even though they don't really need to do this, maybe to get their fighters more out there, will start to do the internet stream thing as well, although you generally can find those fights if you know where to look. So I think that there's a certain amount of patience that needs to happen. But I think you're absolutely right that us losing the casual fan, and the perception is reality, and this perception by the casual guy, who really, let's be honest, it wasn't hardcore fans that helped Floyd Mayweather and Oscar De La Hoya set the pay-per-view record. It was all the casual fans that you know were on HBO and saw the billboards and watched 24/7 and got behind that fight. Those are the guys that helped set the record, and that's the fight fans that are the people that were the revenue that we're losing.
And in closing,
we're losing another generation, you know?
Yeah, and in closing, Anthony, I'll tell you the honest truth. You're a walking advertisement. I'm a walking advertisement. Gabriel Montoya's walking advertisement. People that are listening right now to Leaving in the Ring are walking advertisements. You know how you can get the sport out there even more to get people to attend so you can see these fights on television? Is do exactly what we're doing now. Bullshitting about the sport. 3 hours of boxing talk. Tell people. Inform them. Educate them. Hey, you know what, man? This was a great fight. Hey, what are you doing this Saturday night, homeboy? Man, I'm going to watch this, blah, 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 blah. Nah, man.
Word, yeah. I heard that.
Watching, you know, Jersey Shore and all that bullshit. You want to see some two homeboys get in the ring and duke it out? You know what I mean? That's what you do. That's exactly what how it was put out in the beginning. You know, back when boxing had no way of really honestly advertising it, they relied on people of word of mouth. That's what we do.
But I'll tell you this one time before we hang up with each other. Shouldn't boxing get more strict on the holding and the clinching? I think that's taking a lot away from the sport. Like someone like Berto, who could be such an electric fighter that people would just draw to and be like, yo, I want to watch this fool throw down because he's just throwing them dogs. But for a minute and a half of every round, he wants to clinch.
Good game.
I mean, what's up with that? I think that's taking big time away from the sport, and I think if the sport was to get more regulations on that,
how is
man.
That taking a – but let me ask you this. How is that taking away a lot from the sport? When you got another sport, when you got two guys on the floor rolling around and stuff, you know what I mean?
Well, because it's different. I mean, I think it's a little different because their clinching leads to a choke. And I'm not saying it's more exciting. That's actually my least favorite part of watching MMA is when they get down on the ground because it's hard to see. It's almost like a hockey game. Unless you're there live, you can't really appreciate what's actually going on. But, you know, and that's a good point. I mean, a lot of people don't really follow the rules. And there's a difference between what Andre Ward did against Alan Green
right.
and what Andre Berto does or John Ruiz does.
I agree with that.
Or even Shane Mosley to some extent. There was an artistry, a lost art, in what Andre Ward did because he wasn't actually holding. What he was doing was using his body to press Alan into the ropes and was using both hands to do some serious work inside. He did that through the whole fight. That wasn't clinching. What Andre Berto does is throw 1-2, you get close, because he doesn't know how to fight on the inside, he grabs on. There's a big difference. And I think up in the ref's name, but it was in the Colosso fight, that he started taking points away for dudes holding. And he changed the tenor of that fight. And it made a much more exciting fight because they knew they had to fight and that they couldn't hold.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. So, hey, Anthony, let me ask you really quick, man. What you got planned for October 15th?
October 15th, I'll be here watching the fights, man.
I tell you what, brother, if you want, if you can, I'll send you you and somebody else down to Fantasy Springs in California, over there in Indio, California, to go see some great fights that are happening on October 15th. How about that?
Hey, pencil me in. I'll be there, man. Are you going to be there, too? I would love to meet the whole cast and everybody, man.
You know what? I'm going to try to make the – I know – Gabe, are you going out to that fight?
You know, actually, I turned it down, but I actually think I am going to go. I got to talk to, you know, the credential folks about it. But my family lives out there, so any chance I can go out there, I like to. So I probably
will. There's going to be a couple other people from Leaving the Ring that, you know, write for us and support us and stuff, and our PR is going to be out there, Anthony. Anthony, stay on hold. David Chan, get his information, his email, and his cell phone, brother. Let's give Anthony here a pair of tickets to go to Fantasy Springs Casino on courtesy of Leaving the Ring. Let's send him to some fights, man. Stay on hold,
right
okay,
on,
brother?
Man. Right on, brother. All right, I appreciate that.
Don't hang up, though, okay? It may take David a minute, but don't hang up, okay? Stay on the line, brother.
I got it. All right. No problem.
Anyways, you know, let's see who else we got on the line. I believe we got one of the fighters from that's going to be fighting that night. Let's see. Randy Caballero, are you on the line, brother? No. I think it's the other one. Randy, are you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's up, man? How you doing, bro?
I'm doing real good. How about yourself?
You know, man, all rock star and everything. You're all over the place, bro. All in Nicaragua.
That's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm trying. I'm trying to get my name out there, and I thank Red for helping me out in doing that.
You know, man, Red's a good guy, bro. You know,
Red has
helped out. Leaving in the Ring so much, you know. I'm in debt with Red and stuff. Like I said, Red it looks like the father of Saul Canelo Alvarez and stuff, man. Hey, so debuted over here with Golden Boy, and, you know, it's the coming out party for you. You're going to be on Tela Futuro?
Yeah, it's going to be – I'm not sure if I'm going to be televised, but either way, I'm going to go on and do what I got to do. Doesn't matter if I'm going to be on TV or not, but it'll be great if I do get on TV, but I don't think I'm – it's for sure thing I'm getting on.
Randy, how important is it for you to make sure, man, that you look explosive, or at least you look good? I mean, you know, being signed with Golden Boy, which is a very new company, and knowing that they're in other words, you're going to be developing with them along the way. You're going to be going through their mistakes, their triumphs, everything else. How important, though, is it for you, though, to be in the top of your game at all times?
Oh, I'm always ready for anything, any challenge that they put in front of me. But, you know, being with Golden Boy, it's a great opportunity for me. You know, I have to show them that, you know, I'm going to show them that what they, for signing me, was a good thing they did. You know, I'm going to show them that I'm one of their top fighters that they're going to have, and I want my name out there. And I know De La Hoya is going to take care of me because, you know, even as him just starting, he's one of the biggest company out there right now. He's one of the most talked companies that'll treat your fighter right. And, you know, I know I'm going to go somewhere with them.
Randy, it's Gabe. How you doing, man? Thanks
yeah,
for coming
good.
On.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
I'm curious, you know, because you basically kind of, you know, graduated into Golden Boy with a big class of guys. You know, I was there at the press conference, like 10 guys that they signed.
Yeah.
Are you in contact with any of those guys? Did you guys all head up to your own camp? And is there a sense of competition to be the first guy to be a champion coming out of that class? Or do you not even worry about that?
No, not at all. You know, whatever, you know, we're all a big team, and we're all different weight classes. You know, we're a big team in De La Hoya, and wherever they go is wherever they go. But I don't worry about nobody else but myself. You know, I'm trying to set my goals for myself, and that's to be on top. You know, make it farther than anybody in this sport. And I'm trying to become someone and, you know, become, like, one of the greatest fighters out there. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to get there. And, you know, I don't worry about anybody else. I never really talked to any of them. It's probably the first time I ever met any of them. Was a quick hi, and that was it. But I don't stay in contact with none of them. I do my own thing. Right after that, came back home, went to training camp, got ready, getting ready for my fight, and I'm ready now.
Is your camp worried about – oops, go ahead, Gabe.
I was just curious because at that thing, it was cool because, like, Mitchell Schaefer basically promised everybody to their faces, you know, we will do our best if you do your best. You know, we'll do our job, you do your job. And then you got, like, a commencement speech from, you know, the valedictorian, Bernard Hopkins, you know, just the senior professor there, you know. You got to be honest. It's a little scary when Hopkins looks you right in the eye and kind of tells you this is what you got to do. You know, how much does he take that to heart, a guy like that looking you in the eye and saying, this is what you need to do, and if you don't, you're not going to do well?
You know what? When I got up on that stage and I you know, he looked at me in the eye, and he grabbed my hand. I went in to shake his hand, and he looked at me and said, you're going to become world champion, and that's all he said. And that's all he told me, and you know what? I thought about it, and I go, you know what? I am going to be a world champion. I'm going to keep putting that in my head that I want to become a world champion. So I know with all them, you know, everybody's real nice to each other with them, and, you know, it's like a real big family. And I know, like I said, I know they're going to take me somewhere, and I'm going to show them that, you know, I'm what they want.
You know, Randy, right now, you know, as a prospect, and you're getting a lot of notice, you know, the only concern I have is right now is, could this notice affect you as a fighter, being that we've seen a little infection with particular prospects that get too much attention, a la Omar Henry, where they think they're a little bit bigger than the game? Are you humbled enough to understand that the reason why you're getting this type of spotlight at this moment is because there is a hopes of you becoming great? Not that you're great at this moment. There's a lot of questions about you at this moment, being that can you take a punch? Can you really hang with the pros? Are you going to be great? Or are you just going to be a fluke? Are you another guy in the Golden Boy stable where they miscalculated and put him in with the wrong guy and you end up becoming the opponent rather than the victor?
Well, you know, all that stuff, like, everybody always wants to find out this and that. But, you know, it's if you look at anybody, they've always trying to set their career right. At first, they're always going to put those guys where you're going to, you know, build your confidence in there. And I know that's what they're doing. But, you know, I'm honestly can tell you that I'm ready for anybody that they put in front of me. I'm not one that's going to be back down to anybody. I've been in this sport for so long, and, you know, I've been hit. I know I can take a punch. And it is someone, it's just people talking, and, you know, I love it because the more they talk about me, the more they want to know about me, and then that's when I get my more fans because then they finally see what I really have.
You know, well, you know that we're rooting for you, man, here on Leaving the Ring, brother. You know,
and
you got a lot of love here. You know.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
October, I just
had one question that was kind of serious. I'm just curious, how much did the fact that Golden Boy has pretty much an all-female PR group, you know, working for them, factor into your decision to sign with them?
Yeah, well,
totally
what
messing with you, dude. Totally messing with you, dude.
Are we talking about Jamie Vargas here? Is that what we're talking about, Jamie Vargas and Monica Sears?
They pretty much have, like, yeah, it's like all female publicists. I'm just curious, you know, did you weigh that against top-ranked all-male publicists? You don't have to answer it, Randy. I'm just messing with you.
All right.
Randy's too young right now, man. Let Randy be a fighter. And then... Hey, Randy. Hey, brother, you know, you know, we're going to be rooting for you. Randy Caballero is going to be fighting October 15th at Fantasy Springs, California. We're giving away, we just gave away a set of tickets already to Anthony, who was a caller. We chopping up some boxes. We got two more tickets to give out. Guys, you got to go see this kid. He's explosive, okay? He's one of those fighters where you're going to hear his punches away from the ring. I want to see Randy. You know what, Master? Give me the tickets, Red. Damn. Anyways, Randy. Hey, brother, it's always a pleasure having you on, man. And tell your dad, Marcos, I said, what's up, bro? Heard about the Nicaragua trip. Let's go. I'm ready.
Let's do it. I'm ready, too. That's where I want to go.
Orale, brother. All right, man. I'll talk to you later, brother.
All right, man. Take care, and I thank you. And I just want to say, if anybody wants to follow me, I have Facebook, MySpace, and I also have a website that just came out, teamcaballero.com. You can find everything about me. And thank you guys for having me on the show.
Hey, cool, thank you, brother.
Our pleasure. Take...
Bye.
And there you go, man. Right now the phone lines are open if you guys want to call in. 347-215-7598. Hey, follow us on Twitter, too. You know, we're on Twitter. It's capital letters, LIITR. And then boxing, spell that out, all capital letters. You can follow us on there and stuff. And we're always chopping it up. And you can hear, you can actually see when I get all deranged and screwed up and stuff, when I get all upset about particular things that happen in boxing. And you can see the articles that we do post on the website and the retweets that we do. When Gabriel's got, you know, he's got his mailbag and he's got other things that are going on in his life, hey, we throw it all up there and stuff, man. So, hey, Parver. Antonio Carver, man, the legend killer, which he used to call himself at one time. Well, the legend killer is back in the spotlight. He's back in the mix, the heavyweight mix, though. He wants to fight. He's going to be fighting Nady Aguilera on Showbox October 15th on the same date that Solo Boxeo is going to be airing. Eloy Perez out of Salinas, California, and Randy Caballero out of Indio, California. And Sean Porter is going to be facing Hector Munoz. Now, I was on the teleconference, and I know a lot of people listen to the show, and I just got to say, listen, when you got questions, listen to the teleconference, and if the questions sound identical to the guy that was on before you, dude, change it up. It makes it a lot easier. So instead of an hour-long same repetitive stuff, it shortens out the time. You know, I mean, I'm glad, Gabe, if I was a fighter and I decided to say, you know what, I'm not going to do an interview. Now I understand why some fighters don't want to do interviews, because it's the same questions over and over and over again. Hey, so this time around, what do you plan to do? Are you going to throw the right hand? The next question. So, you know, the way to beat this guy, you're going to throw the right hand? Dude, come on. Get something new. Refresh it. You know, so Tarver's going back into the ring. Am I really excited? Somebody in the teleconference said, you know, it's very exciting. A lot of people anticipated. Really? Where? I'm not. You know, this guy honestly should retire. I like him better as a commentator at this moment. Gabriel, what do you think?
Yeah, dude. Well, you know, it's interesting. I actually did a story today on MaxBoxing.com about Maurice Harris, the guy that just beat Nagy Aguilera in August. You know, most people, you know, probably remember him. He's been around since the 90s, man. He's, you know, fought a lot of bigger names and you know, but you look at the record, it's like 24-14-2, 10 knockouts, and it's not the most scintillating, but if when you look into the two stories I did on him and give a history of the guy, you see that he turned pro at like 16, no amateur fights or very few, and really did it the old-fashioned way, really tough road. But in that fight, when he beat Nagy, he won a vacant, I think it was the NABO belt. And through that, he got a ranking in the top 15. I believe actually they're supposed to, the IBF is supposed to move him up into the top 10, either after his next fight or actually right before. I just don't think they've moved him up. But that's really the guy that deserves a name opponent, that deserves to be on TV. Nagy Aguilera is a guy that just lost a fight. And that's who Antonio Tarver is looking to make a statement against. And once again, his advisor, Al Heyman, was able to work that out and get a guy from basically retirement, is an unproven commodity at heavyweight, has not looked good in at least his last two fights. and now he's going to fight at heavyweight and somehow make a statement and be rejuvenated. And you know, in an advanced age, I think he's 40 now, if not older.
Well,
I don't really understand why we would put this fight. This is another problem in boxing is retreads. We don't really, you know, there's certain guys like a Glenn Johnson who is going to be exciting at age 80, you know, which is in 2 years. But then you got a guy like Tarver who has not been exciting for quite a few fights now, and yet he's back on TV. I'll always argue for Glenn Johnson to be on TV because he's a good fighter, even though he's getting to that point where it's almost time to retire. But Tarver, he's a great commentator. I don't really enjoy watching him fight anymore, and I don't see how he's going to be very effective at heavyweight. We don't even know what he's like as a cruiserweight. So,
it doesn't
make a lot of sense to me.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, and if anything, Tarver's the gift of the gab. He's got a great mouthpiece, you know.
Oh, yeah.
He could talk his way into anything. She should have been a car salesman. The guy would have sold tons and tons of cars and stuff. But you're looking at Nagy, like he's exactly what you know. And the thing is, too, is shame on you, Nagy, is that I even asked him, is at this moment right now, what is the point of having him? He was never a heavyweight. It's not gonna up your stats. It's not gonna up your fan base of beating Antonio Tarver. Antonio Tarver, I can understand why you're gonna go after this heavyweight. You know, because you're trying to at least fill out what's going on in the heavyweight division. But you're sitting there, and this is the thing that gets me, is that you're going in the division right now where you're up in age. You probably will end up being a David Hay opponent. If anything, because David Hay seems to like to take the best roads out there that are very well. They're not bumpy. They've been repaved, you know, by a new construction site. So you're going to be in that category and stuff. And if that's what you're looking for, go right ahead. But to really sit there and say, well, America needs a new heavyweight. Brother, we do need a new heavyweight, but it's not going to be under the banner of Antonio Tarver. I'm sorry. You know, I hate when I hear fight fans go, oh, this guy's definitely going to lose. Well, guess what? You're going to be right just about this one here. Tarver, you're swimming in some part of the ocean right now where you're going to need those little floaties. You know what I mean? With the SpongeBobs on it. Because you're going to drown, brother. You're going to drown in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, I don't – it's just like – you kind of look at it when a guy enters the picture, you know, enters the top 10 or enters the division for the first time, and you go, well, who could he beat? It's like crickets, you know. Maybe Alexander Povetkin would be somebody that, you know, he could fight. Maybe Povetkin could feel that he's ready for him, because he's not ready for any of the top guys. But is he going to beat Chris Areola? Probably not. You know, is he going to beat Sam Peter? Well, maybe. Probably not. maybe Alexander Dimitrenko? Probably not. Either Klitschko? I don't think so. He could probably beat Shannon Briggs. That's not a fight I really want to see. And obviously, since they passed over Maurice Harris, he feels that he can't beat him. So, and I would pick Maurice Harris to win that fight. He's a more natural heavyweight. He can move better. He can box. And he seems to be peaking right now. He's had 4 wins this year in his comeback. And the guy just seems as confident as ever, and he's got experience, you know.
Absolutely.
So what can Antonio Tarver do other than talk really well and probably beat Nagy Aguilera? I think it's not going to look quite as tragic as Chris Bird moving back to light heavyweight, but I think it's going to be boring as all get out. Nagy's a mover. Tarver, I'm not sure what he is as a heavyweight. Probably going to be slower. Probably not going to hit as hard, even though he thinks he will, because he's carrying more weight. I just don't see the point.
Well, I mean, there is some curiosity, and I've seen some fight fans say, well, I'm a little curious. And yeah, okay, let's be curious. But at the same time, let's think about this man's health. You know, he's an older guy going into a division that's a lot bigger than him. You know, he's never really honestly swam the laps of a heavyweight division. So that's the things that you got to look at and be a little bit concerned about. Do we want to see a slaughter or do we want to see a match? Do we want to see something competitive or do we want to see a circus? Okay? That's the thing you have to ask yourself. What exactly are you looking for, and what exactly do you want to see? Now, as we're waiting right now for Alfonso Gomez to call in so we can talk about his upcoming match with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., I do want to talk a little bit. We get a lot of emails, and I apologize if we don't email you all back. We're going to start the whole thing where we do the mailbag. You know, I think it's neat now, so much email that you do get, I leave it in the ring. I do forward your emails to Gabriel Montoya when you do shoot down an email, so don't think I don't. But some of the emails are almost identical. It's kind of the same questions. Okay? And one of those questions is about Floyd Mayweather. We get a lot of emails about Floyd Mayweather. And the thing is that the reason why I don't really like talking about Mr. X is because it's irrelevant at this point because he's not fighting. We don't really know what's going on with his career. As Gabriel Montoya has stated to me, we were talking yesterday. I think it was yesterday, Brother Knight, or the night before that. We were talking about how these charges that are brought up, it's not the first time. I knew of the second time, but it turns out to be this is the fourth time of domestic violence, okay, these charges. Now, some people are like, hey, you know, what do you think, man? Is he the best? I mean, I think he's the best, and I think he's this, and I don't think he's, really honestly skipping around and what he wants to do. I tell you what. This is the thing, and I'm telling Gabriel about this, and I think a lot of people have failed about this to really look at this. If you really look at Floyd Mayweather's career, he was doing fantastic as a super featherweight. As soon as he hit Luis Castillo, and you know what? I'm going to have to stop. The reason why I'm going to have to stop because I got Alfonso Gomez. But I'm going to go back into this, and I know a lot of people want to call in because they're going to see where I'm leading to this. Let's go right now with Alfonso Gomez. What's up, brother? You on the line?
What's up, Dave? Yeah, I'm right here, baby.
What's up, man? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Thanks, man. Appreciate
how's the,
appreciate
how's
you taking interest in giving me an interview. Thanks so much.
Hey, I take interest in giving you an interview, brother. How's the hybrid band going?
It's going great. Actually, I'm glad you asked because I actually went into this talent show in the Spanish network television. It's a national televised show. It's like, American Got Talent, but in Spanish. And so far, we've passed 2 levels, so we're down to the quarterfinals, which is cool.
Now, is that going to be fair, though, for the rest of the people? I mean, you got a name. You know what I mean? I'm just curious.
Yeah, anybody can see it. It's on Estrella TV, or in L.A., it's Channel 62. So just look at your local network. Tengo talento, mucho talento, and just check it out.
I'm just saying, though, as a contestant, though, like the other contestants, because if I was, like, you know, getting involved in that, I'd be like, oh, man, you know what, Abe, just pack it up. Alfonso Gomez is here already and shit. You're going to give it to him. And with
Robin,
I don't
know, man. It's a talent show, not a boxing show. You know, and the contender did pretty well because it's a boxing show. Now that
right.
it's a talent show, it's all about our talent and how good we perform and how good our lyrics are and how well on stage, the presence we have on stage. I don't think it has anything to do with boxing. Nevertheless, if I was a network executive, I'd say, hey, let's pass him on to the next round. I'm sure you can get some fans to watch this shit.
Exactly. Let's get down to business, man. Let's talk about the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. And, you know, I believe it's what, been 2 years, brother, when I went down to your gym, and it was during Christmas time. You had the festivals there, and you were even telling me before, you know, when this even kind of occurred, you said, hey, the fight that I really want is Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Now you got it. How important is it for you to really honestly, this is in the words of a lot of fight fans, expose him for what he really is?
Well, it's extremely important, and not to expose him for whatever people think he is. It's just extremely important to win this fight. He has two arms, two legs. He has advantage over me, like height and weight. I wish this fight could have been done, you know, 2 years ago when he was still a welterweight. Nevertheless, it happened now, and I took it because I still feel that even though with those advantages, I can still beat him. All I got to do is be in tip-top shape and have my trainer, my dad, Alfonso Gomez Sr., come out with a good game plan to beat him.
Now, was it a good idea? I mean, Alfonso, I mean, the last time you were, you know, in that division, you know, almost close to being a middleweight, that was during the Contender Series. You were younger. I could see you trying to shave that down because your body can do that. But we're talking about an older guy now. How was your body responding to doing that?
Well, you know, I'm sure now naturally I'm more of a light middleweight, maybe welterweight. Before, during the Contender Series, I was definitely not even a welterweight. I could have pushed myself to light welterweight. But now as I get older, my body got used to being heavier. You know, it's just the bones grow, everything grows. So I'm sure I won't have any problem, you know, adjusting to that weight. You know, nevertheless, I know I'm not fighting Kelly Pavlik, so that's why I took the fight.
I got my co-host here, Gabriel Montoya, who's a feature writer for Maxbox and also the co-host of Leaving the Ring. Go ahead, Gabriel.
How you doing, Alfonso? I think we've met once at the Wild Card briefly. It's a pleasure to talk to you, man.
Thanks, Gabriel. Appreciate it.
In that vein, it actually wouldn't be a bad thing to fight Kelly Pavlik, considering how slow he moves. But anyways, I digress. I'm curious, you know, speaking of weight and whether or not you're a natural junior middle or not, is the strategy, and I know you don't want to give away your strategy, but is it better for you to try to bulk up as opposed to, say, just barely break the limit? You know, anything from 148 to 154 is junior middleweight. Is it better for you to just kind of utilize your natural speed advantage, being a smaller guy, and come in a little bit lighter, or do you want to try to match him for strength?
Well, no, I'm definitely gonna try to work on the on being faster hands and having all better footwork in the ring. I think that's gonna mark the difference in the fight. But you know, nevertheless, it's not even a 154 the fight. The kid didn't want to wake up and run in the morning, so he pushed it to be 157. He wanted it to be 160, but my manager Gary Gittleson was able to negotiate something with them to make it a 157 max. So with that in mind, you know, I know he can make 154 if he really pushed himself or if the code of fight actually had gone through, but I guess, you know, I'm not motivation enough to get up in the morning. I don't know. But all that in my mind is just advantage to me. He's not really going to be prepared for this fight. He thinks I'm an easy target. Maybe somebody who doesn't need to, maybe he felt like 157 could give him more advantages, but at the end of the day, you know, I'm going to come in strong, fast, and just determined to beat him. Like you said, I'm getting older, and I don't have much time to make something of myself in the boxing world.
So that's an edge for you then, knowing that he wants to wait not because it's an advantage, but in your opinion, because he wants to cut corners. And I know your work ethic speaks for itself. Everybody talks about what a hard worker you are in the gym. You're always in shape. You're always ready to go. Do you look at that as the first crack in his defense, a bit of a mental weakness?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, why not make 154? It's just 3 pounds. Besides, they were thinking of fighting Cotto for 154. But, you know, that's his problem, not mine. I come to every fight prepared, and especially to this one. This in Anaheim. I'm an Anaheim resident, so that's a hometown for me right there. besides in Los Angeles area, and Los Angeles to me is like Guadalajara too. So I'm from Guadalajara, so that to me is very important to showcase that I can beat this kid. It doesn't matter what weight it is. And, you know, after I beat him, I don't know what's going to be left for him to drop down to 154, because one, if I, with a little welterweight beat, then what the heck is he going to do at 160?
So I guess the winner of this is in line to fight the 157-pound champion winner of Martinez-Williams then.
Well, you know, when that comes to it, when I beat Chavez Jr. and they offer me that fight, then depending how much the moolah is, then we'll say yes or no. It's all about the money. And now, you know, the sport's great, and all these promoters somehow are separating what's beautiful about the sport, which is fighting the best against the best, putting it into their own interest now. So I'm going to play that game too.
Alfonso, you know, and you know, I got to ask these questions. These are going to be some tough questions, and I know you're going to be honest about them.
Sure.
And in no way I'm trying to be disrespectful to you, but a lot of fight fans are curious. If you couldn't take Miguel Cotto's punches, what makes you think you're going to be able to take Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. punches at a much heavier weight?
All right. Well, have you shook Chavez Jr.'s hand? Have you ever shook his hand?
When I shook his hand,
I thought I was shaking a girl's hand. Now, I'm not dissing him at all. His hand felt very soft, very weak, and it didn't feel like those hands when you grab the hand. You're like, dog, this motherfucker can get hit. You know, you cannot totally feel by the hand. You can totally feel by the handshake who hits and who doesn't. And let me tell you something. Chavez Jr. does not hit. You know? I have to be there in the ring to actually say that, but I can guarantee you he does not hit. You know, when I shook Miguel Cotto's hand, he felt like a strong head, solid fighter, solid body. Everything seemed solid of him. Chavez Jr. is just very weakling, very, very weird. You know, I don't know. But I'll tell you after the fight. You'll see after the fight if I can take his punches or not. I don't know what to say.
Exactly. Well, let me ask you this then. I've seen a lot and I've heard a lot of fight fans are saying, Alfonso Gomez, you're saying you're going to knock him out, but you don't have a really high ratio of KOs. Why are you so confident that you're going to knock out Julio Cesar Chavez?
Well, that's the goal, to knock him out, and hopefully I can get that draw, because if we let it go to the decision, well, we know how that goes.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm going to do everything in my power to hit him, to beat him, little by little. I know I'm not the one. I know I'm not the KO guy that knocks out people with a one punch, but I can tell you, I heard my opponents. They feel my power. And, you know, given 12-round timed length, I'm sure I'll be able to do enough damage for him to either quit or drop.
So it's fair to say, as strategy-wise, you're looking to be the aggressor. You're looking to be the guy that's going to push him back towards the ropes.
Yes, I'm going to be the guy pushing him back towards the ropes. Freddie Roach is a great trainer, so I know that he's going to work on using the advantages that Chavez has, which is reach and his height. They're going to try to jab a lot and do their thing, you know, but I'm going to be on the inside, and eventually, you know, he's going to feel comfortable doing the inside work because that's what he does all his life. So, you know, when it comes to that, I'll be able to use many feet to beat him.
Actually, you know, I have to go back to your earlier point. I agree with you. I've shaken Miguel Cotto's hand, and damn, you know, you can just, he's just, you can feel it. You know, he's just all fighter. It's like, kind of like the late Edwin Valero. I remember shaking his hand, and I still feel it. You know, the guy just
had, I know. I shook his hand, too, and I was amazed. It felt like a crowbar or something.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, your hand, I have a hand actually hurt. I was like, dude, you like slapped it and then shook it. It's like, Jesus.
Yeah.
I'm curious, though, in that vein of examining everything, the weights and the handshake, for you, when does a fight begin? Does it begin at that moment when you know it's the opponent and you begin to examine everything? I mean, is everything for you facts and behavior, all of it?
Yeah, it begins the moment that the fight's taking on. Even what I'm saying right now, sometimes the thing I say is strategy, you know. Hopefully you can hear it or the fans can hear it, or at least it goes around. And everything I say and do is a strategy to beat him mentally and make him know that I'm better than him somehow. Through my raps, through the music, just doing something different at a press conference rather than saying the same thing over and over again. Or just all around just being enthusiastic in the fight or not even caring, not even acknowledging him. Just every little thing counts for me, and I'm sure it counts on him too.
I was ringside for your fight with Jesus Soto Carras, and leading into that, I have to be honest with you, I picked him to win, and I kind of was looking at more like the Cotto fight, and I wasn't quite sure how you would handle kind of a bigger guy. And you really surprised me. I remember Steve Kim said, no, I've been watching him train at the wild card, and you're going to be very surprised. He's very rededicated, refocused, and really ready to go in this fight. And you really surprised me. How much of it was that fight was it a turning point for you in your career?
Well, that fight was extremely important, mainly because before that, even though I had beaten a lot of fighters like, you know, Taki, Ben Taki, named fighter Peter Manfredo or Arturo Gatti and so on, they always found an excuse why I was beating them, whether they were either too old or there was a five-round fight or whatever it is, they were always looking for an excuse. So this fight was important because this guy was young, ranked number one, undefeated in 16 fights. You know, he had a 16-fight winning streak. So beating him to me was very important because he showed that, you know, I beat everybody based on who they are, not based on what they are at this point. If for example, Gotti, I knew he was going to try to do the inside or box. So with this pressure, I knew that the right hands landed on him all the time. So I threw a lot of right hands. On the Soto Caraz fight, you know, I played the game where, yeah, we're going to go toe-to-toe. We're going to do this war. And you know, I said that on the interviews. Yeah, we're going to go toe-to-toe with this war. So he went around, and he thought it was going to be a war. Everybody thought it was going to be a brawl. So what I did is work the opposite. I worked my jabs, my movement, try not to engage in the toe-to-toe combat, and it worked perfectly. I mean, I threw him off balance, and he didn't know what was hitting him.
Did that fight with Jose Luis Castillo, though, it seemed like you had a lot of respect for him. But that's that fight there, since you didn't take him out immediately, like you had an old warrior there that was really honestly there to be just kind of, you know, handled. Did that seal the deal, in your opinion, in your management opinion, to get the fight with Julio Cesar Chavez? Meaning that if you would have been more dangerous, if you would have looked more savage, you probably would have not gotten the fight with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.
Probably. I don't know. It's just my persona. I'm not really an aggressive person. And my conditioning coach and some of the people that saw the fight, they're like, man, you should have jumped in the first round, just take him out. How come you didn't do that? I don't know. It's just not me. You know, I'm the person who jabs, moves around, tries to see what the other eye has. I could start seeing his eyes that by the third round, I could see giving up in the rounds. And by the fifth round, definitely, I saw that he was done. I even went to my corner that round and said, I think that I got him in one or two more rounds. And long and behold, he stopped the fight right in that second. He felt the same thing. I saw it in his eyes. But, I kind of should have gone paid for it and been all aggressive, you know, kind of like, I don't know, most fighters do. Manny Pacquiao does it all the time. It just went ahead and take his head off. But I don't know. I'm not that type of fighter. I'm a strategy fighter.
I got one question for you, brother, and then we got to, you know, I know you're busy, it's late and stuff. In the rap that you did at the press conference, for the people that don't speak a whole lot of Spanish, what were you basically sending the message to Julio?
That's what I'm talking about, mind games, you know. I know that even though he was smiling and all that, I know he gets comments about it, you know, through his friends, family, whatever it is. And he didn't like it. He doesn't like it because basically what I'm saying to Rab is that he's a kid, you know, he's immature. I mentioned Cricri, who in Spanish could be Barney, I guess. You know, he listens to Cricri. I say that todavía no se desarrolla, he's not very well developed. I say that que le descendieron los testículos, his testicles descended. So I was, you know, throughout my whole rap, I was throwing these little jabs at him, you know, saying that he's a kid, he's still young, immature. And in between, you obviously, I try to use a wordplay, you know, using, you're stiff and quiet like a mannequin and so on. You know, just check out the rap online. And if you speak Spanish, you'll enjoy it. If you speak English, then I'm sure you enjoy it too.
Well, Chris, there you go, man. Alfonso Gomez got his fight coming up with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., which is a fight that he's been asking for some time, but he finally got it. He got the fight, and it's going to be a defining moment for you, brother. In a lot of ways, a lot of people are looking at that. If you take care of him, you're going to be able to
Well, this is a defining moment for both of us. He beat me. I mean, I'm sure he's thinking that after he beats me, he's ready for a world title. He actually beats a young, legit, you know, fighter who's beaten recognized fighters on his resume. And I'm looking at it the same way. You know, beating him actually puts me in line for another world title and, you know, solidifies me as a true contender, beating a young, heavier guy than me. You know, no more excuses. They're probably going to say, oh, yeah, we knew he was a bum. Oh, yeah, we knew he was inflated. They're going to try to look for an excuse for my victory. But aside from that, you know, I'm going to be on top of the rankings, right next to a world title. So this is a very important fight for both of us. So I'm sure he's going to train hard, and I'm trying to train hard. We're going to give the fans a great fight. Southern California is going to stop that night because Chavez Jr. and Gomez are going to win. And most importantly, Southern California is going to stop that night because Chavez Jr. is going to lose for the first time.
Hey, it's going to be muy caliente that night. That's the bottom line.
And the best part, I'm going to do a Manny Pacquiao. After the fight, I'm going to go perform somewhere.
There you go, man. All right, brother. Hey, man, thank you again. Like I said, say hello to the family. Rob is my boy and stuff, you know, who's your brother. Hey, man, I wish you all the best, brother. Wish you all the best.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. And it's going to be an exciting December 4th.
Absolutely.
I can't wait, man.
You take care,
man.
Take care, guys. Happy evening. Bye.
You too.
You too.
There you go, man. And, you know, we got interview after interview. We're going to be waiting a little bit for Urbano Antaleon, who's got a fight coming up with Humberto Soto. And talking about another guy that's been waiting for this particular fight. Another guy that's been calling for this particular fight. And we're talking about 2 years, 3 years down the line. Urbano's been waiting for this fight. And Alfonso Gomez, really quick, Gabriel Montoya, what do you think, brother?
He sounds like he's on top of his game as far as how he's going to approach this. And it's the kind of fight, you know, I look at Chavez Jr., if he's on top of his game, he probably should win this being the bigger guy. You know, I think he's got all the punches. Doesn't quite have the experience. And, you know, people could say about what Gotti was like at the time or maybe Jesus Soto Cross, you know, what has he done? Those are quality-level dudes. And Alfonso, you know, in the Manfredo fight, when he was very young in his career, was able to beat Manfredo, you know, in a four-rounder on the contender. This is a guy that is an overachiever. He always exceeds his own, you know, everyone else's expectations of what he can do. And he really believes in himself. And a lot of this game is mental. And the rest of it is preparation. And when those two things meet each other, good things happen. If Chavez Jr. is not on top of his game, and his track record suggests that he is never on top of his game, I expect, you know, the Gomez to upset him. If not, and Chavez comes 100% and is really bought into the Freddie Roach system, then I expect him to win.
Absolutely.
So it's all going to come down to that.
I'm going to patch in some fans right now where we're waiting. I got Carcinio. What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on?
Good,
I got myself in the doghouse calling tonight.
Is that what do you mean in the doghouse, man? Did Floyd kick you out?
Yeah, well, we just had a little incident at the movie. You know, I was trying to rush to get out of there, and I was like, I got to make the show. I got the Twitter message like, we go live in 20. I'm like, oh man, you know.
And you know what, man? I always appreciate, you know, Carcinio, man, who's a big supporter of Leaving the Ring. He's my boy, you know, and we make jokes. We always throw jokes back and forth and stuff. You know what, Carcinio? The good part is that you called in because there is something, that, you know, and I know right even right now I'm looking at the emails. People are like, hey, okay, Alfonso's off. Go back to what you were talking about. What were you getting involved in? And I want to hear what you got to say because you follow Floyd's career. But this is my whole thing. And I was saying, look, there's two particular questions. People say Floyd Mayweather, that people complain that he cherry picks. That's the first one. The second one goes, well, you know, who is Shane Mosley? Who is Miguel Cotto? Who is Antonio Margarito? Well, I'm going to answer those questions for everybody, in my opinion, and then I'll allow Carcinio until we got Urbano Antaleon call in. And Carcinio, when he calls in, don't hang up because I do want to continue conversation because it's not fair to have, you know, my rebuttal of what that is all about and not have somebody that follows Floyd Mayweather in and out. So let's go really quick. Look, the cherry picking came about, in my opinion, and if you look at Floyd Mayweather's career, is immediately after Julio Cesar Chavez. I mean, Julio. I mean, my God, Jose Luis Castillo. If you really look at that, when Floyd decided to move up in weight, he got a young, strong guy that was a contender. After going what he had to go through, if you kind of go back into his career, you could kind of more or less see that, you know what? They decided to really honestly pick and choose who was going to be put in front of them. You know, and that's what the whole cherry picking came about. The reason why it's being is because the whole cherry picking came about is because Floyd Mayweather had a plan. And that plan was to become a megastar in boxing. And he looked at everything now like a lot of other people. When Floyd Mayweather at the time was a very celebrated amateur and came out of the scenes as a pro boxer, not a lot of people were looking at him. And the reason why they were not looking at him, because for one, he was not Latino. Let's be honest. He was not. He didn't have a Spanish last name. He was an African-American, which is very tough in this business at this moment, in this era, to get the recognition. So he did everything right. He fought Alfredo. He fought Hernandez. He fought all these guys and still was not getting that recognition. So he understood, I got to keep the O. And that's when he decided to pick and choose after Jose Luis Castillo. Now I move on to that. People say, okay, about Miguel Cotto, why didn't he fight him? Well, he claims that who were they? Well, the only thing I got to say about that is, Floyd, who are you, dude, when Genaro Hernandez decided to take you on? Genaro Hernandez was an established champion already. Isn't that what boxing is all about? Giving the chances to contenders? I mean, Vernon Forrest would not have not had a name if Shane Mosley would not have given him a shot. Ricardo Mayorga would not have that name if Vernon Forrest would not have given the guy, you know, given him the shot. Same thing with Oscar De La Hoya. Oscar gave a lot of opportunities to a lot of fighters. You know, Floyd Mayweather, at the time, look at his record. He only had 18 fights when Genaro Hernandez said, okay, come on, step up to the plate, let's fight. And after that, he became a champion, okay? He became an established champion because he fought a guy that had got in with the best. Now, if we get fighters that didn't, champions, this is the point, champions that didn't do that, guess what? Bernard Hopkins, at this moment of his career, would still be champion. He would still be the middleweight champion of the world. Tito Trinidad, like me and Gabe were talking about, wouldn't have never had a shot. Tito would still be welterweight champion at his division because of the fact that that's what boxing is all about, taking chances. So this whole thing about who's Cotto, who's Margarito? Margarito was more established. Cotto was more established throughout his career than Floyd Mayweather was when he faced Genaro Hernandez. I'll give it to you there, Casino.
Well, here's the thing. Miguel Cotto was being brought along the same way they were bringing Oscar De La Hoya. When they were bringing Oscar up, they were bringing Floyd up behind him. So when Oscar leaves or take place, you have the next guy. And Cotto was behind Floyd. Floyd Mayweather offered many times to fight Miguel Cotto at 135 and at 140. And he offered, this is a quote from Bob Arum, too. You probably can look that up online, probably ESPN. Floyd Mayweather asked for a $10 million guarantee to fight Miguel Cotto. Bob Arum would only give him $7 million. So this was,
but this is not a question of money though, brother. This is a look. Genaro Hernandez obviously did not get not even close to that fraction of money at that time. What Genaro Hernandez did at the time, even when he fought Oscar De La Hoya, he said, "You know what? I'll fight him because I think he's a snot-nosed kid. I'll fight Floyd Mayweather because it's about who's the best." Where at what point in somebody's career do we decide to think that, hey, they're the best because they get the most money? That's not boxing, Carcino. That's not boxing at all. Boxing is about giving opportunities, letting the guy that has a storyline, the Cinderella man, to see if he can really honestly come forth and making this soul fantasy into reality. And I'm going to hold you off just for a minute, Carcino. I don't want to cut you off. I don't want to seem like I'm taking over. I want to put you on hold because I do got a guy at this moment that can honestly feel the pain of a lot of contenders in that terms of saying, you know what, I'm not giving an opportunity because nobody wants to fight me. And he got the opportunity. Urbano Antonione, you on the line, brother?
Yeah, what's up, man? How's everything going?
I'm doing fantastic, man. And we're talking about right now is contenders. And, you know, you did honestly get, you know, stopped in the tracks of getting to that road, leading to that road, but now you're back on track, and you're actually getting a fight that you've been talking about for, what, 2-3 years, and how does it feel? Because at one point, the last time we had you on, and this is when Leaving the Ring was barely getting off the ground, we had you on, and you just sounded so discouraged with boxing. Now that you got the opportunity, now that you see, you know what, all the sweat, all the tears, all the blood, all the sacrifices are coming into twine, how do you feel now?
Well, I mean, I'm very thankful for the opportunity, but you know what I mean? When I was winning everything, when things were on the high, for example, nobody wanted to fight me. Humberto Soto, I've been asking for that fight, for, like you said, for 2-3 years now. And I guess, you know, ever since I lost to Miguel Acosta, it seems like now the champions are willing to fight me now. I guess, have I been exposed? I don't know, whatever the reason is. But I guess a lot of these champions, they just, you know, just avoiding, why take that chance to fight somebody, you know, when they're doing so good, I guess. And, you know, I got the opportunity against Humberto Soto, so you know, it's just a matter of taking advantage now and, you know, getting prepared to my best and not letting this opportunity go by this time like we did last time.
Absolutely, man. Go ahead, Gabe.
Urbano, this is Gabriel Montoya from MaxBoxing.com and from Leaving in the Ring. Welcome to the show, man. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I think we actually met before at the Wild Card. A few years ago, I did an interview with you. I'm curious, man. You had your loss, you know, with Acosta, but you've retooled. You took a little time off. That was, you know, July of 2009. Now you've had two back-to-back wins. Do you feel completely back? Do you feel that you're back running at 100% at this point?
To be honest with you, I mean, ever since the last fight to Miguel Acosta, you know, I made, like you said, I took time off, and that was pretty much to figure myself out, find my happiness again, find my hunger in boxing again, because before the Acosta fight, I had several fights now before that I wasn't satisfied with my fight, even though I was winning, knocking people out. I wasn't satisfied, and I mean, the loss happened, and it was just time to, you know, it wasn't so much, I wanted to get back in the ring right away, but my whole thing was I needed a change. I went to the Philippines with Manny Pacquiao and trained with Freddie Roach for a bit, but, you know, a great trainer, but just doesn't have the time, you know, to invest in me. So I came up here with Abel Sanchez and you know, started working with him ever since. And am I back to 100%? I mean, I would have loved a little more time with Abel Sanchez, you know, before this opportunity came. Because I mean, you know, we're just doing different things, different exercises. You know, he's not trying to change my style or anything, but you know, just trying to make a little bit of corrections. And obviously, they're not gonna be tweaked as fast as we would like them. But you know what? It's like the opportunity is here, and like I said before, we got to take advantage. Because would it come again later? I don't know. So especially with these champions, they just don't seem to want to, you know, fight the names out there. So, I mean, I'm pretty happy though. I'm way happier than I was the rest of my career before, you know. So I guess we're going in in a good state of mind. Physically, we're you know, working on new things. So we're good. We're really good.
Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to ask, and Urbano, are you a little upset that right away, even through the press conference, they had Brandon Ruiz, Bam Bam, and they're talking about, okay, the winner, but in reality, it was not the winner of Antalyon versus Soto. It was Ruiz versus Soto. Did that kind of get underneath your skin?
Oh, of course, yeah. They're just definitely overlooking me. But you know what? It's like I've told people before, all my career I've always been, you know, kind of overlooked through, you know, the other fighters, Mighty Mike on Chandler, that would kind of turn pro in my time. I mean, they were the fighters that were, you know, faster, stronger, and you know, it's kind of like, where are they at now? And, you know, I'm the one still here, still trying to prove to people, you know, that the guys that you guys overlooked so much, you know, he's the one that at the end of the day, he's the one that's going to, you know, have the most success and do what he wants to do in boxing, and that should become a world champion. And I'm going to do that on December 4th.
Urbano, you know, looking at Soto,
yeah,
you know, when he was in the smaller weights, he's a big guy, you know, for the smaller weight classes. You know, he's 5'7" and a half, like 5'8". And he was more of like a knockout artist guy. You know, he had a lot of power. He was able to kind of bully people around. He almost reminded me of like a Tito Trinidad, but a smaller weight, no frills, box puncher. But he's four fights at lightweight, you know, David Diaz and, you know, an old Jesus Chavez, Ricardo Dominguez, and Fidel Munoz. He's gone the distance in all of those fights. Have you seen those fights? And give us your assessment of what you think of him as a lightweight. I don't think he brought his power with him. What do you think?
I got to agree with you on that, especially, I mean, David Diaz, you got to get him. He's just a tough guy, you know, not people have, you know, knocked him out. But the other guys that, I really didn't see his last two fights. I didn't see his last fight. I seen the one before that. And it just seems, like you said, he just didn't carry his power with him. And come December 4th, he's going to be there with a guy that's naturally bigger and stronger than probably anybody he's faced. And he's in for a night, for sure. But, yeah, I don't think, I mean, he's not that effective at 135. In terms of power, of course.
Do you even think he gets bullied around a little bit, too. It's like he didn't bring his strength or his power. And do you think that's the big advantage, is that you're more natural to this weight class? Is that going to be the difference?
Oh, that's definitely going to be the difference. And, by heart, I'm in all my fights, I come forward. And you know, it's like we're working on little tweaks here and there. Like I said, with Abel, we're still going to put pressure, but we're just going to be a little bit smarter about things. And it's gonna play a big factor in terms of me muscling him around, pushing him around, and I'm gonna make a fight out of it for sure.
Is your chin right now a factor? I mean, getting KO'd and it was a big surprise to a lot of people. Is that in the back of your head, Urbano? Is that something that haunts you for a moment to see whether or not can my chin hold up to this? Does your camp, are they concerned about that?
You know what? I'm not really, never really been worried about it. I mean, with the Miguel Acosta, before I got knocked out with that punch that I didn't see, I got hit with that punch like 20 times, you know, in that same fight. And I took him pretty well. It was just one that I didn't see. And I went down, you know. I was hurt. I got up. I thought I could have continued. I thought the referee should have given me the opportunity to continue on, but he decided not to. So it is what it is. But I'm not too worried about it. It's just, my concern now is, and the things we're working on, like I said, is, you know, is like, don't be there for them uppercuts, you know. It's like, you know, a little sidestep here, you know, a little, you know, smother him after I throw my combinations, you know, little things that we're doing is going to make a big difference. And, I mean, I'm not too worried about it.
Are you expecting him to pressure you to see whether or not it was a fluke, or are you expecting him to try to box you, you know, more of a flawless way to make sure that he has that secured bout with Brandon Ruiz, who's really honestly has kind of came into the boxing scene as, you know, people look at him as the future, future star of HBO.
Yeah. I mean, well, he looked good, you know, against Brandon Ruiz, that is. He looked good against Peterson, I mean, but, you know, me or several people that I've heard, you know, that know boxing, that aren't boxing, you know, he really, to me, he wasn't that impressive. I mean, he went out and threw a lot of punches, just out-hustled him, you know, just broke him down. And I mean, Peterson didn't seem like he gave too much resistance. And I think any fighter like myself or you know, anybody that puts that much pressure on Peterson was going to give him trouble, especially when he tried to stand there and, you know, and fight back. It just wasn't the thing to do for Peterson. But, Brandon Rios, I mean, whatever, you know. It's like, I'm not worried about him. Whatever. You know, I was just telling him, he's kind of annoying, too, so screw him.
Well, come on, man, tell us a little bit about Brandon Rios. I mean, tell us your thoughts and what your feelings about it. I mean, that's the whole reason why we made Leaving the Ring. We're not looking for this really conservative press conference interview. We're looking to hear your real thoughts, man. I mean, that's what the fight fans want. We want to hear, how do you really feel about this, brother? Go ahead and let it out. The board is open.
Brandon Reyes, what I feel like, seriously? Okay, I'll let
about
it out.
Anything. Humberto Soto and Brandon Reyes.
Okay, Humberto Soto, for example, he showed a, you know, it seemed like a cool guy at the press conference. He showed a lot of respect. You know, I've always been the type where, you know, I show respect to everybody. I don't care who it is.
Yeah.
I had never met the guy before, so at the program, we're already on the, you know, on the stage or whatnot. And I went up to him, you know, hey, Humberto Soto, I shook his hand, what's up? He's, you know, just talked to him, chit-chatted for a bit before the press conference got started. You know, it just seemed like an awesome guy. Brandon Rios, on the other hand, he's just an obnoxious guy. He's, you know, I like to call him an attention whore. You know, it's just him. He just reminds me so much like a Fernando Vargas, I guess, you know. But, I mean, he's a type of guy that I can't be around for too long, I guess.
There you go, man. Urbano Antolion. Keeping it real, man. And, you know, Urbano, you know that I've been a fan of you, bro. I told you last time, even when I met you in person, I was a fan of you from the beginning.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And I'm glad that you're getting this fight, you know. But, you know, I got to be honest with you. I'm very skeptical at this moment of what did that take out of you mentally getting that KO? You know, and I think with Humberto Soto, we're going to find out. And that's the curiosity of where my money's going to go. I think my money's going to go with you still, because I think that the upset special is going to be a very special thing. And if you and Rios was to get in, it's just going to be another great fight. I don't know whether or not if it's going to happen. This whole thing about which promoters always try to sell, this guy's going to get the winner. For some reason, it derails after the upset special seems to occur. I'm just wishing you the best of luck, brother. Best of luck.
Yeah, I appreciate it. But I'm gonna say something real quick about you know, my mental state of mind in terms of getting knocked out real quick. If anything, what it has taught me, you know, like I said, it's not something that has worried me all my chin's questionable. You know, anybody that gets caught with a shot like that, you know, it's, you can't do nothing about it. But what it has taught me for sure is I'm telling you, in my past fights, I was just, you know, just felt like Incredible Hulk, you know, like hit me, I'm gonna take it, I'm gonna break you down. That was my mentality back then, and it worked for so many fights. So how could it be wrong, you know?
Right.
Until obviously that time, he was just that sick fighter, you know, gave me a little bit complication, but I thought I was losing the fight big time. So, you know, I got a little careless and you know, tried to put more pressure and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's just it. It's just like you learn from it. And what I did learn is, you know, just be smarter and don't take for granted my opponent's power. That's for sure.
Absolutely, you know, and I'm speaking as a, you know, the label is the guy that is a quarterback on a Sunday on the couch kind of fan. That's all I'm talking about. You know what I mean? You obviously are the fighter. You're the guy that's got to go in there and take the punches and stuff, brother. And I'm still a fan, regardless of what happens, dude. You're a very class act. When I met you in person, you are very receiving to the fans. I just got to give you an A+ as a person, hands down, great guy. Boxing skills, I still got to give it to you. So I'm still rooting for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that so much. You know, it's just it is the business we're in, and you know, fans, they're the ones that fill up the seats. You know, so I'm not doing it out of, you know, because it's my job. I just love, you know, meeting everybody and chit-chatting with everybody. And I mean, boxing has been so great to me. You know, so. Got to treat everybody with respect, man.
Absolutely, brother. And, you know, I'm pretty sure in closing, my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, is going to say something. All I got to say to you is the best of luck, brother. I hope you pull it off, man. I hope you do it, because I want to see more of Urbano Antolion. And I think you're good in boxing. I think you're great for boxing. I think a lot of people don't know a whole lot about you at this moment. They only know what they saw, which is what happened. I want to see more. I just got to see more.
Yeah, it's just crazy, man, how you know, just the table's changed so much. You know, I went from, I'm telling you, being overlooked to, I mean, proving myself a little bit and then everybody high on me. And then, this, you know, I got knocked out or whatever, and it just went back to, you know, Urbano Antolion, why are they fighting Humberto? So he got knocked out. It's like all my credibility went down the drain, I guess,
right.
You know what I mean? So...
It's the shitty part about boxing is that, you know, we look at that, you know, and it ruins a lot of credibility for fighters and ruins fights, in all honesty, because just because you get KO or just because you get a blemish on your record does not mean you don't got one fight left in you. As a people, as an Americans, as Latinos, as, you know, Asians, UKs, name it. Why don't we look at history? History is there for the – it's written there, okay? You know, we have seen plenty of great fighters. Sugar Ray Robinson he lost fights and rematched them, won them. You know, we've seen a lot of great fighters. Muhammad Ali at one time was written off. He came back. There are such things as comebacks. You know, Miguel Cotto right now, I said rest up. Rest up. I do not write history. I don't write the book of how things go in boxing. He may make the greatest comeback in history where we may talk about it for the rest of our lives. That's the problem with fight fans. That's the problem with boxing. Wake up. We do not write what's written in the book of boxing. Urbano Antonillon has a new way of writing this stuff. We don't write his lifestyle. We don't write what is going to happen in his life. We might see a change. We don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, there's a lot of people out there that have always been doubters, man, and they've been a big inspiration for me, you know, in the gym, you know, like working harder and pushing myself more when I'm tired, you know, it's like getting out of my comfort zone. It's for them, you know. I've always had something to prove, and I'm not done. I haven't proven it yet, and I mean, you know, winning the world title is like, it's great, you know, to be on that level, you know, to be a world champion, but what I'm, like I said in my preference, what I'm more excited about is the fights that come after winning that world champion, that some of the champions, like Humberto Soto, for example, are not living up to, or in my eyes, are not living up to being a world champion. They're not fighting the best out there. They're not. That's what I want. I want to fight the best out there. And that's what the reason I want that title. So I could be the target that people want to, you know, want to fight, and I want the best fight out there. And how do I get them? Because obviously nobody wants to fight is by getting that world title, and that's the reason I want that world title. The world title doesn't mean anything if you're not gonna you know, fight like a world champion. You're not gonna fight the best. There's no point in it for me.
Absolutely, brother. And once again, man, I appreciate you calling in, and you're always a pleasure to speak to, brother, and I'm always going to be cheering for you. Gabriel Montoya, if you want to close the interview, go right ahead, bro.
I just wanted to, you know, say thanks, man, and good luck to you in your fight. And, you know, just like I said, Nick, we said throughout this, you're a class guy. I wish we could clone you and get more guys that are willing to fight the best out there, because you're always, every time I talk to you, all you're talking about is, I want to fight this guy who's the best and that guy who's the best, and they always seem to avoid you. So, you know, congratulations to you for finally getting the fight you wanted, and good luck to you, man. I'll be ringside.
I appreciate it, man. It's a short career, so we got to take advantage of it while we're in it, you know. So you got to aim for the
best,
man, and you want to be the best. So,
absolutely, brother. Hey, man, God bless, brother, and hopefully you're successful, and I'd like to get you back on, you know, when you have the time, brother.
Anytime, man. You know, we're up for it. So,
all right, brother.
It. All right, you guys have a good night.
You too, man.
Sure.
Bye.
Urbano Antonillon, who's going to be fighting on the top-ranked card again, Humberto Soto. Obviously a fight that he's been wanting for quite some time, man. If you just guys tune in right now and you're catching the end of the interview, you can always get it on the archives of Leaving the Ring on the website. It's definitely a fight that he's been wanting. I'm going to patch back in really quick, Carcino, before you talk, though, I do want to say what's up to one of my, a really good friend of mine and a supporter of in the UK. Telby, what's up, brother?
Hey, dude. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. You know, I just saw your name right now up on the switchboard, man. How's everything going over there? Hey, what time is it over there right now?
It's 3:20 in the morning.
God, talk about being a hardcore fight fan right there, Gabriel.
Well, I'm sorry, I have him on block on Twitter. Was I supposed to talk?
No. I'm not talking about Carcino. I'm talking about Telby.
Oh, Telby. How you doing, Telby? How you doing, man? Three in the morning. Good Lord, man. I thought he was still talking to Carcino. I was just checking out.
How you gonna block Carcino, man?
Because he's a troll, dude. You know, fight fans throw me questions
about all kinds of stuff. He only talks to talk about one guy who isn't fighting. So I have
been He is a bit stalker-esque.
What's that?
He is a bit of like stalker-esque, but he's got a bit of a stalker.
Yeah.
You know, Tell B Man is a great dude. He's from the UK. He made a song about leaving the ring and There Will Be Blood. We got it and stuff. We've thrown it up there. I'll throw it up again and stuff.
Don't throw that up. That song is.
You got another mix?
I'll do another one. Don't throw that one up.
All right, man. Throw me another one and stuff. Toby, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. Don't hang up and stuff because I want to chop it up to you. We got one more guest that's going to be calling in right now. It's going to be with Jesse Vargas and Elbry.
All right.
Leonard Elbry is going to be calling in with him. Wants to chop it up with Leaving of the Ring. Carcino, what's up, brother?
What's
in
up?
All Carcino's defense right now, Gabriel, he was actually calling in about Darrell in the Super Six. He wasn't calling in about talking about Floyd Mayweather and stuff.
Gabe's not feeling well. That's what I said. If you guys are drug testing on that show, he needs to be in by Thursday.
Gabe?
You have to be actually funny. That's the thing. I'm actually glad that I'm sitting down because hearing that he's not calling about Floyd, I had some heart palpitations there for a second.
No, I talk about it. You just don't listen. Only when I talk about Floyd do you pay attention to what I'm saying.
Really? Oh, okay.
So, Carcino, what do you think, man? I mean, you agree a little bit on what I was talking about, the whole Jose Luis Castillo. After that fight, he started cherry picking or no?
No, I do not agree with that because
The
plan was to fight. Plus, he was with Bob Arum, so Bob was pretty much.
But see, there's only one flaw to your plan there, is that you weren't not there when the plan was made.
You're absolutely correct. I can only go by what was said and what was printed.
Exactly. And what is said, listen, what is said and what is thrown out there is almost like with Darrell, what's happening with Darrell now. If you're against what Darrell was happening with Darrell, then guess what? They're only being fed what they want to put out. So you can't really go off of that. You got to look at things a little bit, deeper than the line
that's in front of you. If I could jump in one second, that's exactly right, Carcino, and that's the difference. When you argue with someone like me who actually works in the industry and tries to tell me what fights happened and what didn't, and when I respond and say this fight was ducked for this reason and that fight was ducked for this reason, your information comes from what people like myself write. My information comes from the people that work for those people, the people that work with Floyd, the people that work with the fight camps that told me this is three separate sources. That Floyd's camp did not want to fight Joel Casamayor because, and I quote, he is a difficult fighter, a southpaw with a heavy Cuban amateur career. We don't want that fight. Floyd's own words, he is a Showtime fighter. I'm an HBO fighter. I'm not going to fight him. That was 5 minutes after he walked into the press conference for Casamayor and Frazier's post-fight and called them out in front of the media. And a media member caught him afterwards and said, did you really mean that? And he said, and I quote, oh, hell no, man. I'm an HBO fighter. There's Showtime fighters. There's bullshit, and then there's the truth. There's what you read, and there's what we actually know. That's the difference. That's where guys like you frustrate me, because you come at me with a bunch of bullshit about a bunch of shit that you've read and pictures of you with Floyd trying to be a fan and then saying that you're not, and when your whole agenda is to tell me how I'm wrong when my facts tell me quite the opposite. That's what bothers me, and that's why I consider you something of a troll, and that's why I blocked you.
Well, anyway, now that you're done, I do my homework, and I do have some of the similar kind of friends that you have. And I'm actually
They're not my friends.
I'm actually around the same people that you're around. I've been in a lot of different press conferences. I've been there myself, so. I've been around just like you've been around, but I don't just jump at everything I read and throw it out in the public. I do listen constructively, and I do take what you say to heart, but you never really say...
That's right.
You really
right.
just
that's
come
why,
with
that's,
flat
that's why you made a video
than,
about me.
Completely
misrepresenting
a company. Really came with facts.
That's actually not true. And that's why you made a video about me on YouTube saying that you bested me and Steve in a debate when...
Let
me finish my fucking sentence, Carcino. Carcino, let me finish my sentence. That's why you misrepresented that and called it a debate, when actually it was me and Steve schooling you.
No, you guys just have a slapstick comedy back and forth. It really was. Steve only said like two lines, and I was, and then he was done.
And I actually said quite a bit more than that, and they were all fact-based. He was not the linear champion. Waldemir
like
was not the linear champion. And he certainly wasn't the unified champion, because the only established champion, as I explained to you, was Margarito. All the other ones couldn't hold the belt for one, more than one defense. And when they fought an elite fighter, they lost. Meanwhile, Antonio Margarito, with his WBO belt, was taking on number one contender after number one contender and held it for 8 defenses. He was a legitimate fighter. He's the reason that Floyd bought his contract out so he could leave Bob Arum and avoid that fight, which was being scheduled. And no, he did not make $8 million to fight Waldemir. He made about 6. He had to give about $2 million back because it was a back-end deal against the gate, which Floyd has never been good at selling. Those are facts.
Well, here's one fact for you. Floyd said he got 12 for that fight. So
yeah, Floyd said a lot of things.
Printed, and I'm telling you what was said. So he said he got 12. Waldemir was the legitimate welterweight champion of the world.
But did he tell you that? I'm going to ask you right now. Did he tell you that he got 12?
No, he told that. He went on air and stated that.
Exactly
so
right. And I actually talked to the people that paid him. I actually talked to multiple sources, like a good journalist does, and confirmed that shit. It is not true. It is not true.
Well, that I don't know. And I never
exactly.
said that it was true. I'm telling you that's what was said. But you can, you know, you probably have your facts, so you can look that up and see. But I'm just telling you what was stated. That he rebutted it when it was brought to him, and he said he got 12 minutes. So that's my take on that. But as far as the fighting aspect of it and not the money, because that's what's important,
mm-hmm.
he fought Waldemir, who, like you said, to give that Cinderella guy the chance. Waldemir was called the Cinderella Man, if I'm not mistaken.
That was not, no, wait. That was not, hold on. Gabe, and Carson, come on, bro. First off, he did not give him the chance. Waldemir gave him the chance. Mm-hmm. Waldemir was the unified champion of the world. So let's not get that twisted. Let's remember that.
Waldemir was the weak link in the welterweight division.
I know, but let's not get that
convenient.
Twisted. Waldemir could have said, you know what, Floyd, I'm not fighting you. I'm going to fight a bunch of slums that I could beat. And Floyd would have never gotten nothing. So if anything, brother, you need to applaud Waldemir to saying, you know what, I want to fight the best. He was brave. He was brave enough to try to be daring to be the best. See, that's my problem with Floyd. With Floyd, I love Floyd. I love his style. I like what he does. But my problem is a lot of people, Gennaro and De La Hoya, gave him a chance. And he chooses not to give anybody a chance to be great. And you cannot sit there and tell me, well, he fought Waldemir, the Cinderella Man. No, brother, Zab Judah gave Waldemir the chance.
And let's look at one statement. You said that that's what Floyd says. Well, here's another thing that he said. I'll never fight a sparring partner. Well, guess what? Henry Bruselas, chief sparring partner for Miguel Cotto. All these guys, DeMarcus Corley coming off a loss when he fought Floyd. Henry Bruselas coming off a draw and a sparring partner. Arturo Gatti, well past his prime. That was actually just, positioned by Bob Arum to introduce Floyd to the pay-per-view community using somebody that had a bigger draw. Understandable fight. But then he never fought the best at 140, and fighting him at 147 did not count. Sharmi Mitchell, one fight removed from a horrible knockout loss and looked horrible in his welterweight debut. So Floyd decided to fight him as a debut in the welterweight division. Zab Judah, coming off a loss. Carlos Waldemir, 9 losses, 6 draws. And Floyd, in his own words, said that split decision win that he got over Zab Judah doesn't count because everybody knows we don't count split decisions. That's a direct quote to an interview with Brian Kenny. Oscar De La Hoya, not the best fighter at that time at 154 pounds, just the biggest cash cow, not the best at 154. Juan Manuel Marquez, career lightweight, actually career featherweight, who had barely moved up to lightweight in his 30s. And then had to move up to 154. Floyd said, let's do the fight at 154, changed the contract the week of the fight, came in at 146, and then paid to have that done. Shane Mosley had to wait 17 months to actually get that fight, and we all knew what happened there. So is that really the resume of a guy that's fighting the best, or is that the guy that's cherry-picking the best names possible to him? I'd say that he's a cherry picker above 135 pounds. Case closed.
Okay, that's beautiful. Now, that's a beautiful story. Okay. Now, let's go into that. He went to all the negatives, too. I love that. Now, let's try
to. I
want
to know all the facts, Tarceno. That's all the facts.
Oh, okay. That was all the facts. Okay. He skipped the fact Baltimore was undefeated for like 9 years before he fought Floyd Mayweather. But he went straight to the office.
I love that.
I was waiting until he got to Baltimore. He said, oh, Baltimore, 8-9 losses. Now it's about wins and losses. Manny Pacquiao's got 3 losses, 2 draws, and 3 about defeated, I mean, possible losses that they don't count. But okay. You don't mention that when it comes to him.
Let's look at this. In 2002.
Okay, that's when one. He fought. Let's do something else.
Okay,
hold on. Let me show you when he decided to start cherry picking, okay?
Okay, yeah,
after he fought, I'm going to tell you. After the Jose Luis Castillo, I'm going to rewind it for you. Before the Jose Luis Castillo, he fought a tough contender, okay? Jesus Chavez. Before that, Diego Corrales, okay? Corrales. Goyo Vargas. Justin Juco, Carlos Rios, Angel Manfredo, didn't have to fight him either because Angel was looking for the Gotti fight because he had lost to Gotti. Before that, Gennaro Hernandez. You see the trade that he was doing to get where he needed to be? After he decided to move up, for the vacant lightweight title, Jose Luis Castillo, who we all know he lost that fight, then comes back and he made the adjustments. What a champion should do. Make those adjustments. He whooped the shit out of Jose Luis Castillo. But guess what? He decided to go after Sosa. He decided to go after Chop Chop Cordy. He decided to go after Sean B. Mitchell. After the Sean B. Mitchell, he went after Zab Judah. Zab Judah, who had lost to Baltimore. Then after Baltimore, Carlos Baltimore. Then De La Hoya, then Hatton, and so on and so on. Bro, you got to look at it, bro, for what it is.
Okay.
You got to look at it and question it. You know what, man? He was taking some tough fights at the beginning of his career. Tough fights. What happened?
This is what happened, okay? I've heard y'all statements now. This is what happened.
Go ahead.
Well, we can't say. We got to speculate, right? But this is what happened, Gabe. When he went up to 140... You know, his plan was to fight Costa Zoo. We all know that, right? I know you've heard about it, right? And you know what they did. Showtime and HBO couldn't come to an agreement. And you can ask Bob Arum because, you know, it was printed, but, you know, it could be wrong. But you got the sources, Gabe, so you can talk to Bob. And Bob Arum couldn't get the fight with Costa Zoo. They went ahead because they wanted more money. They went ahead and fought Ricky Hatton in England. And try so they can win that fight to get in a better position to negotiate for more money with Bob Arum. And we all know how that went. So then they said,
What's interesting about that is that Floyd went on TV and said, before that fight, I'll fight Ricky Hatton in England. When Ricky Hatton won that fight, suddenly he didn't want to go to England. I actually wrote an interesting article to me anyways, when Floyd returned from his quote-unquote retirement, saying the king of contradictions is back. And I detailed pretty much every contradiction he's ever made in the sport because he's full of them. And that was most people say what they do and do what they mean and they back up their words. Floyd seems to change it depending on the argument when he fought Carlos Baldemar was I'm fighting him because he's a linear champion. Well, the first time I interviewed Floyd before the Hatton fight, I said, if you're interested in being a linear champion in history, then why are you fighting Ricky Hatton, who's the linear 140-pound champion, at 147? Why would you miss out on the chance on being a consecutive, concurrent, you know, simultaneous, rather, linear champion? His response was, I'm the president of boxing. What I says goes. So it's always very convenient when it works in his favor. It's all just lip service in the end.
Okay. Now, moving on to Ricky Hatton, after they couldn't get the
fucking brick wall.
Ricky Hatton. No, I heard you. I'm going to go through the whole thing.
It's a brick wall
and
dissolve. You're like allergic to that.
Okay, Ricky Hatton's father said, we are not going to fight Floyd Mayweather at this time. We need to take
the that was
fight.
After
Floyd
the. That was after. That was all after Floyd decided not to. After Floyd decided he wasn't going to live up to his word and go to England. Ricky was a bitter draw. He made more money in that fight than Floyd did.
Why
would
he fight in England? And you know why he said he wouldn't fight in England? He saw what happened to Costa Zoo in England. They let Ricky Hatton get him below the belt. It was a wrestling match.
If you're the best, why shouldn't that matter? If you're the best, why would that matter? If it's a tailor-made style, and I've heard
yeah.
the argument that he shouldn't, it didn't matter what weight he fought him at because the style dictated that Floyd would win, which I actually believe. But
right.
if that's actually true, then you should be able to fight him anywhere. All
you
the greats did it. Sugar Ray Robinson did it multiple times, and yet Floyd won't fight overseas. How can you be the best if you don't do what the best have done?
Exactly, and you can't criticize, you know, Joe Calzaghe and any of these other guys if they didn't do the same. And you know, the thing is this too, bro, is if you look at it, even when that fight was announced with Floyd Mayweather and Ricky Hatton, I said, man, it's going to be a replica of what Floyd did to Arturo Gatti. Rest in peace. We all knew it. It was a bad matchup for Hatton, not for Floyd, for Hatton.
This is the thing, Dave, and this is really the last thing I really want to say on this, because I think it's a tired subject, is that guys like this make me seem like I'm a hater. And I actually am a guy that actually gets in the ring. I've been doing Jeet Kune Do for 3 years. I've been boxing for 15 years. I get in the ring, and I actually take punches, and I learn about the sport from the inside out. And then I, in my work with sources all through the sport. I have tremendous respect for what Floyd does in the ring. I think he is a once-in-a-lifetime type fighter, certainly once in my lifetime. Maybe Guillermo Rigondo is another guy that will come close to what he did, although he's starting a little late. I have tremendous respect for him as a fighter. It's his fans that piss me the fuck off, because they're blind.
Hmm.
Well, I don't think I'm blind. I think I can see very well. Floyd's
I'm sure my favorite fighter of all time. I'm sure Ray Charles thought he saw pretty well, too.
Yeah, I got Felix Trinidad ranked above Floyd Mayweather. That's the way I look at it. I looked at it. Thomas Hearns is my favorite fighter of all time, next to Felix Trinidad. Mike Tyson is third. I'm like, dude.
I'm willing to bet you. I'm willing to bet you any amount of money that you would not say that if Floyd was in the room with us right now.
I told him that. Matter of fact, he knows me and him are great fans of Felix Trinidad. So,
okay.
Yeah, we've had this discussion. What are you talking about?
Can we return to reality and get Leonard Ellerbe and Vargas on now?
Marcinho, I'm gonna let you have the final word, brother. Go ahead, man. Tell me what you got, and then I gotta let you go because we got a lot of other things to cover.
Thanks for having me on, and everybody. Dave's not really like that. He's kind of like, you know, like got too much pressure on him right now. Writer's block. But
what the fuck is that supposed to mean?
You're too caught into me. You know, you got to get caught into everything else. Too much going on.
I'm just allergic to time thieves, and that's what I consider you.
I know. If there's too much negativity, you got to learn to be positive, man. Be a positive person.
It's a family show, but go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Can we move on?
You're getting all upset and.
You're wasting my time with a fighter that isn't fighting, that has no interest in furthering our sport.
He fought in May. He fought twice in a year.
It's fucking October. What are you, blind? I guess you are because you can't tell
October.
What month it is. It's October. He won't be fighting until next year. He's not fighting anytime soon. He has no interest in furthering the sport. He has no interest in giving the fight fans the fights they actually want. Because you know who's actually the best welterweight?
What are you talking about?
He's not
going to
fight shit in May other than maybe some guys in a cell. Sorry.
So when he fights,
the real guy that he should have fought at welterweight, who was the best welterweight, is Paul Williams. But we all know why that fight can't happen now, don't we?
Oh, yeah, we don't know, because Paul Williams got beat by Quintana. Paul Williams got beat by, man, look.
And then he knocked
Williams
him out in one round. Now what? Then he knocked him out in one round. Now what?
He came back and knocked him out in one round. So what?
I thought you said earlier in this argument it's about the last fight. It's about how you were winning.
Yeah, and the last fight.
I guess just Martin like your hero, you don't stand by your words. Can we end this fucking thing?
Okay. Where's the last fight he had at 147?
Hey. Listen,
anytime you want to come back to school, give us a call.
Listen.
Okay, when's the last fight he had at welterweight?
Listen.
He ain't fought at welterweight in about 3 years, but yeah, we ducking him.
Dude, but who's counting? I guess you don't know what month it is, and you're just as blind as you were before. Thank
I
you.
Good night. Floyd fought
Take
20
care.
A year.
Say hi to Peter Pan
anybody.
For me in Neverland, all right?
Hey, I don't know about you guys, man. I don't know about the listeners right now, but Carcino, Gabriel,
oh,
you guys got
to
come up with your own radio show. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know. Gabe gets you going, you know, because he got all these facts of being negative. You know, he looks at everything negative. He'll look at a fighter's score and find something
it's
wrong.
It's not negative, though, dog. It's not
and that
negative.
Is a difference.
He's Larry Merchant
exactly.
Jr. Larry Merchant Jr. Right there.
Shut the fuck up. That is the difference between you and me. A fan looks at facts as hating. A journalist looks at them as simply facts.
That's how I look at them. You show me facts, I shut up. I ain't got nothing to say.
I don't think if they bet you $1 million, you could shut up, quite honestly.
Listen, I'm gonna close this argument right now.
Right.
Gabriel Montoya's Larry Merchant and Carcino's
yep.
Jim Lampley. Bang, bang, bang. There we go.
Bang, buddy. Bang.
I'm going to put you on hold, brother, really quick, man.
All right.
Hey, Carcino, and two, man, Carcino is one of my boys. I know a lot of people, you know, listen, he's one of my boys. He's a good people, you know. He's just, you know, hey, it's boxing, brothers. It's boxing.
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't have no animosity towards Gabe, yeah.
It's strange. You say I always talk about other fighters, and every time you've been on the show when I'm on, all you want to talk about is Floyd.
And I'm defending Gabe. I'm going to defend him right here. He did not want to talk about Floyd. He was calling about Durrell. Arsenio, I'm putting you on hold. Yep, but I'm going to put you on hold because we've
time for everything, I guess.
Been on this. And
that's all you remember.
We will continue this. You know, round two will be next week with Carcino and Gabriel, all right? I'll put you on hold.
Good Lord, I can't wait.
Fight fans, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We still got a pair of tickets, man, to give out to go to Fantasy Springs, California, to the Golden Boy Solo Box Sale. Call in, man. Come on. Get these. I don't want the tickets. I'm not going to go. You know? Call in. Get these pair of tickets. And, man, you know what? I always have a great time. You know, the funny thing is that, you know, it's always, you know, hard to kind of get up to get on the show. And I'm getting a bunch of texts from everybody, you know, that have my personal cell phone. Everybody's saying they love the show. It's hilarious. Gabriel Montoya, Carcino going at it. It's great. I love it, you know.
I can't wait for the video.
And I wasn't trying to steer something up. I was just trying to give my opinion out to most people that listen to the show. It was my opinion. I'm hoping that Burgess and Ellerby call in. They might have been listening. Might have taken it that we're haters of Floyd. We're not.
Uh-huh.
It was just
I've written some of the more positive things about him in his last few fights, particularly the Mosley fight. And I told him to his face, I think he's an absolute artist in the ring.
And
he's a true embodiment of Bruce Lee's be like water, because he is in the ring. He is whatever he needs to be. And I thought it was a brilliant performance. Other people were bored. I was enthralled.
Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California. You have a chance to meet Eloy Perez and Randy Caballero, who I called in a little earlier. I'm going to text LRB and Barrios to see where they're at. They only have a very short time to have them on the show, maybe 13, 14 minutes. Don't know where they're at. Like I said, you know, hey, these were questions we were answering, and we were giving them out to people that were emailing us and saying, hey, man, blah, 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 blah. In all honesty, want to interview Vargas. They don't want to talk about Floyd or the happening because the whole fact is that the whole interview was about Vargas. So please do call in if you're listening to the show. Don't know if that turned
this
you
guy,
off.
Did you get to see Vargas' last fight?
Yeah. That body shot.
This kid is – he's like a Margarito 2.0. He's like way better, in my opinion. There was more potential to be. I think that power is very real, even though the guy he fought hadn't fought in several years. He's a prospect. That's what he's going to be fighting on some level, although I kind of question the California Commission's decision to let that guy fight. But this kid is all class.
really intelligent guy, really fun to talk to. And it's interesting seeing that kind of style, kind of that pressure, almost Margarito-esque style. But he's being trained by the Mayweathers, by Roger Mayweather. And it's interesting to see that style and that approach to the game being implemented in a guy that shows intelligence in the ring and patience and all the really the intangibles to be, in my opinion, a future star. This guy is going to be dangerous at welterweight, man. People say it's thin right now. We'll give it a couple years because this guy, I think, is the guy.
Yep,
I'm not
I think
just
so
saying
too.
That to get them to call in. I really like him a lot.
You know, I like the kid, too. We had him on Prospect Watch. We spoke to him. It was a great interview with Jesse Vargas. Kid got a lot of power. We want to know. We definitely want to know what he's got left. You know, what can he do in the sport? That's not what he's got. What he's got left. We just want to know what he has, you know, and that's something very much that a lot of fight fans are wondering and stuff, you know, and the curiosity really does come along with Roger Mayweather. He's been with him for some time. What can the kid, what can he really, really do? And being a Hispanic fighter, hey, it's got to give you, it's got to, you know, give you a little bit of interest about him. I don't know. 347-215.
Exciting.
Yeah, exciting fighter. 347-215-7598. Come on, call in so I can give these tickets away. And like I said, it's at Fantasy Springs, Indio, California. Eloy Perez and Randy Caballero. Call in, get your tickets. Morales is back in December 18th in Tijuana, Baja, California. The fight will be added to the Showtime pay-per-view, Hopkins versus Pascal. If Morales wins, the rumor is that he may get a shot at Juan Manuel Marquez if Marquez gets past Casitas. Now,
not a given either, man. Dude, that's a good fight.
It's a good fight. You know what? I had a chance to be on the call for the press conference call there, and I did ask Marquez, even though he didn't, the translator who was doing it, I'm not knocking for your translating and stuff because mine would have been absolutely terrible, he didn't even ask him the question. My question was seeing that what the first fight was with Juan Diaz, that Diaz had that style of pushing him back to the ropes. How was he going to be able to really honestly? Because hold on, you know what? Do I got Jesse Vargas on the line?
Yeah, that's right.
What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. We were talking a little bit about you a little while ago. I got my co-host Gabriel Montoya, brother. You know, so the excitement obviously is coming along. You know, in your second fight, the body shot, but when you got a fight that's so short and you've been training and you're getting up to gear, you're putting oil on the wheel so you can start trucking at your opponent. When you knock a guy that early, does it kind of affect a little bit in training camp? Does it make you want to kind of like take a step back and say, well, maybe I shouldn't train that hard because I'm knocking people out?
Oh, of course not. I mean, knocking people out is just an extra. You know, I feel that we have to be ready for every fight for it to go the distance. You know, if it does come to a knockout, I mean, that's good, right? But we always have to be ready for the full 8, 10, 12 rounds, whatever we're going to fight. I mean, tell me?
No, go ahead. What are you going to say?
Well, I mean, we just got him with a clean punch. You know, it just came from, I set him up pretty good. He had an awkward style. I set up, and I took advantage with that hook. Placed it right on the chin.
Do I got your manager on the line right now, too?
Yes, you also have Leonard Ellerby.
Leonard, how you doing, brother?
Hey, how's it going?
Fantastic. Leonard, let me ask you this, because a lot of times when you hear Leonard Ellerby, you automatically think Floyd Mayweather. Now, when you have a strong Mexican-American kid like this, a lot of people really wouldn't think, you would invest the time. Why did you invest the time in such an exploding kid like this at the moment?
Well, because Jesse Vargas is a tremendous talent. He is going to be the next great champion. We have great expectations for Jesse. He's putting in all the hard work in the gym, and the sky is the limit.
You know, Leonard, I'm we had a bunch of callers a little while ago talk about Floyd, and I don't want to even circle this around Floyd. I know a lot of people in the chat room, emails, Twitter, they want me to talk about Floyd. I'm going to avoid that, and the reason why I'm avoiding it is because we asked Vargas to be on the show, not Floyd or yourself. So I'm going to go back with Vargas. I hope you don't take that as any type of disrespect.
No, not at all.
Okay. Going back with you, brother. Going back with you. Okay, we had the Friday night club thing. What is next in store for you, man? What do you want to do? What is the thing that you want to show the fight fans at the moment, brother?
Well, I mean, we want to show some good fights. I mean, that's the main thing. But what I want is I want to, you know, get up there with the best guys in my division. You know, I'm training real hard. I'm training for fights. I could say 10, 12 rounds now. You know, I mean, the work ethic that I have is so much because my goal is for the 12 rounds. So I'm trying to train for that now. So when it does come, I'm already ready. So that's what I'm looking forward to, the big fights, you know, with, I could say, Maidana, Bradley, all the top guys. You know, I'm not.
Right.
They don't scare me. You know what I mean? I just can't wait to get in with them. But, I mean, it's up to my promoter and the letter to tell me when it's time to meet up with them.
Being with Golden Boy, though, having Victor Ortiz and how he's looked at his last previous fights, and a lot of people were saying that he's got the Camacho syndrome, meaning that, you know, he doesn't want to trade anymore. He wants to, like, kind of run back and box. Is that one of the perks of being with Golden Boy? You might get the opportunity to get a shot at Victor Ortiz rather than a Brandon Ruiz?
Well, let me cut you off. Jesse is with Mayweather Promotions.
Okay.
So let me clear that up.
So being with that, I mean, Mayweather Promotions, and obviously you guys are doing this promoting thing or whatever the case you guys are doing, LRB, and you could fill me in on that part there in the business there, because I don't know that. You know, I'm what you call the Sunday quarterback, you know, watching the football game on the couch, okay? So having that leverage, is that what the road that we're leading to see him possibly get in? Because see, the whole thing with Latinos, we're looking for the next machismo fighter. Is Vargas that guy to really get in there? Because Ortiz obviously failed when it comes to that momentum.
Yes, Jesse is the next great fighter. He like I said, he's putting in all the hard work now. We have a tremendous team. And the sky is the limit. Jesse is on the fast track. We're ready to put him in with a top 10 guy in his very next fight. So, like I said, the sky is the limit. We have every expectation that Jesse will be world champion within the next year.
And about Victor Ortiz, I think Victor Ortiz is a great fighter, but, you know, he has the option to fight and box at the same time. Right now, recently, he's been showing us his boxing abilities, which, I mean, I think what the Mexican people, Mexican people want is just to see your heart, you know, that you're there and you're going to give it all out, right? It doesn't matter if you box, if you fight, you know, if you box, we're talking about boxing, you know, with style, such as Alexis Arguello, Chavez, you know what I mean? And
right.
I feel that if they see you box but not run away, box them, I mean, they will support you also. And that's my two options, either fight, pressure, or box. I could box also. It's just that, you know, when I see the opponent that I should box, I will, you know. But like I said, that macho thing, I think it's more heart that they want to see, you know, where you're going to leave it all in the ring. And I think I have that, and I showed it so far.
Leonard, this is Gabe Montoya with Max Boxing and Leave It in the Ring. Both of you, thank you for coming on. I'm curious, you know, your banner star is obviously Floyd. And he came at a point, you know, when you guys began a promotional company where he had a bunch of bigger names to fight and kind of even build further on his fame. With Jesse, you're doing something new in that you're building a guy from the ground up. Is there a particular strategy that you guys have in place to build him from the ground up?
Yes, we do. And the strategy is like I just mentioned, he's totally different from any other fighter. You know, most guys that they have to have 17, 18 fights before you're willing to take a chance But like I said, Jesse is a special talent. Once in a while, you see these special fighters come along, and Jesse is one of them. We have great expectations from our whole team that Jesse's going to be a tremendous champion. And like I said, right now he's just putting in the necessary work, learning the tools of his trade. So when that opportunity comes, he's ready to, you know, leap forward.
Jesse, you know, most guys would look at you and say, pressure fighter, Mexican guy, he's going to be coming forward like a Margarito. But you seem to show a lot more intelligence than that. We met after your last fight, and I talked to you about how talented I think you are at range. You're very good at natural range. But your trainer is not your typical Mexican fighter trainer. It's Roger Mayweather. Can you talk about, you know, the difference between the kind of Mexican style that, you know, maybe you grew up with, and then working with someone like Roger who teaches in a completely different manner, and how you're trying to blend those two together?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing, blending them in together. I mean, I started off fighting. I mean, I was just a fighter. You know, I come pressure. But, you know, Roger, he was showing me other tools, which made me mix both of them up. So I fight, and at times I box, and, you know, wherever I feel that I'm a very smart fighter, you know, just like you said a little bit ago. And
yeah.
If I see that I should box for 1 second and maybe fight the other, I will. You know, I try to see all my options. What's the easiest way to make the fight? You know, or the fastest way to end it, the easier way to make it. And that's what I try to do. And, I mean, recently, so far, I think I've done it. You know, like
yeah.
In this fight, I showed something different. In the Zavala fight, I pressured him a little bit because he had good head move. He had good defense. So I thought I had to, you know, show him who's the boss in the ring.
And can I add a little bit on to that? Jesse, a lot of people don't know, but Jesse's been working with Roger ever since he was a kid.
Oh, is that right? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard that. Yeah, last time we had him on, he did tell us and stuff. I got one more question for both of you guys, and then obviously we let you go because the show's going to be ending in a few minutes here. And you guys can both answer because I'm very curious about what you guys both have to say about this. First, it's going to go with Vargas. With right now what's been happening, the bad press has been happening around the Mayweathers. Vargas, does it affect you in any way, at any time at this moment right now, in terms of training camp?
No, not at all. I mean, they're my teammates, and I mean, I think, no, not at all.
Ellaby?
No, none whatsoever, because what happens is a lot of times you have allegations out there, and just like with anything, you're innocent until you're proven guilty. So you just keep moving forward and you know, let things happen.
Naturally. Now, well, let me rephrase it a little bit. Now, I totally agree with you. Innocent until proven guilty. But in terms of getting fights for him, has there been any problems where people are kind of, you know, I mean, come on, we live in a society where they don't need innocence until proven guilty. You know, they look at a particular guy and they're like, well, I don't know if I want to do business with them because of the rumors of what I've heard at the moment.
No, and that's what they are. You just said it best. They're just a bunch of rumors. Jesse's a tremendous fighter, and what we do have problems with is that people are starting to find out how talented he is, so nobody wants to fight him. But that's one of the challenges that I have, and we continue to work through that. And like I said, the sky's the limit. You know, I have every expectation within the year Jesse Vargas will be world champion.
Hey, I appreciate you guys coming on, Leaving the Ring. Jesse, we've had you on before. It's always a pleasure, brother, getting you on, Leaving the Ring. Hardcore Fight fans wanted to hear about your victory. Hardcore Fight fans wanted to hear what you got in plan and stored in the future. LRB, it was a pleasure, brother, you know, having you on. I wish we can get you guys back on again, definitely on before your next fight or after your next fight. LRB, like I said, didn't want to put this all around you and about Floyd, but I tell you right now, if I didn't ask, people were going to jump down my throat. I'd love to have you on again, brother, so we could talk a little bit about what's going on with Floyd's career.
Not a problem. All you got to do is give my main man Gabe a call, and he knows how to contact me.
Hey, I heard right. He's a virus, dog. I'm going to tell you the truth. I heard he's a virus. Nobody wants to answer his calls. What if I call you instead?
I'll take care of it.
Thanks for having
me, Leonard.
Right.
Thank
right.
you for having me. It's a pleasure. Good luck
all
to
right.
you guys.
Bye-bye.
I'm the same fan. I'm Leonard Ellerby's fan. Hey,
man, dog.
Like Carceno, somewhere Carceno is really jealous.
Anyways, Leave It in the Ring, Boxing Scene's official radio show. Your host, David Duenas, Gabriel Montoya. Hey, I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Nobody called in for the other set of tickets. Everybody was too busy listening to the show. They wanted to hear what we had going on. But I tell you what, we'll try to make a Thursday show rather than a Friday show so we can send these last two tickets that we have from Leaving the Ring. We're trying to give back to the fans. Trying to give back to the fans that are listening to the show, because if there's one thing that Leaving the Ring is trying to do is support the sport. That's what we're trying to do.
Well,
Gabriel, any closing thoughts?
Hey, it's a great show, man. Always a pleasure, Dave. I'm gonna go enjoy my Friday night.
Me
I don't
too.
Know about you.
I got a 12-pack right
week,
here.
Sir.
Della Fatudo is on the mix. We didn't give our schedule, but you know what? If you're a hardcore fight fan, you don't need our schedule. You already know. Leave it in the ring. You guys have a good night.
Peace.